Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Friday afternoon. Hope everybody's feeling all right, doing well. We got a heck of a lot of news to get to. Some very big things happening right now, including the long-awaited and extremely controversial interview between Tucker Carlson and Mike Huckabee. We'll be checking in on Tuck and Mike here in just a second. But just massive news across the board, including the tariffs and the fallout from that and the lucky bets made by certain members of the Trump administration that are allowing them to make billions off of their own policies. Isn't that convenient? So a lot to talk about. I'm going to try to take your calls, but frankly, no promises. We're going to play it by ear, but we're going to be joined in the third hour by Tiffany Cianci. Our bubbly little fairy of doom will, I'm sure, grace us with all sorts of just horrifying headlines about how private equity is systematically destroying everything good in the world. So it's always fun and very informative when she's here. And I'll try to open up the phone lines in the second hour, but we got so much news and a lot of clips to get to. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Friday, the 20th of February, 2026. Caltech, Ash, what the heck? That's not my story. I don't know what these are. Here you go. Supreme Court rules most of Donald Trump's tariffs are illegal. The U.S. Supreme Court on Friday overturned most of President Donald Trump's tariffs, which could lead to more than $175 billion in tariff refunds for American companies. In a 6-3 decision, the justices ruled that the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, the law that the Trump administration used to justify his many sweeping global tariffs, does not grant the president the power of taxation, and tariffs are a form of tax on imports. We'll, again, get more into this a little bit later, but that's not good news. Some more not good economic news. U.S. economic growth weaker than thought in fourth quarter with government shutdown, consumer pullback. The nation's gross domestic product, the total output of goods and services, increased at a 1.4% annual rate in the fourth quarter. The Commerce Department reported Friday, down from 4.4% in the July-September quarter and 3.8% in the quarter before that. The figures point to a more modest pace of growth in the coming quarters as consumers take on more debt and cut back on saving to maintain their spending. We'll get back into that as well. We're going to probably go into the next segment and talk about just the general collapse of America and the number of ways it's manifesting economically is just one of them. Meanwhile, Trump vows to release classified documents on aliens after saying Obama's comments were, quote, classified. After accusing the former president of confirming aliens exist, President Donald Trump has announced that he will be releasing government records related to aliens and any unidentified flying objects. Which, okay, great. Yeah, that's fine. Do that now. Do that now. See how that works. I mean, I feel like they're getting a little desperate. Trump says he'll decide whether to bomb Iran in the next 10 to 15 days. Great. We'll await that decision. We'll report more on that later. But, of course, it's not going to be the simple matter it was last June, especially with headlines like this. NORAD intercepts Russian planes near Alaska. The North American Aerospace Defense Command detected, tracked, and intercepted two Russian Tu-95 bomber planes, two Su-35 fighter planes, and one A-50 spy plane until they departed the Alaskan ADIZ. The defense agency launched two F-16s and two F-35s and four KC-135s to complete the mission. So we had to scramble to deal with Russian jets in our airspace over Alaska. Finally, hundreds of U.S. troops have been evacuated from El Udeid airbase in Qatar. Hundreds of troops have been evacuated from the airbase in Qatar. The New York Times reported this, citing sources of the Pentagon who noted that forces are also being evacuated from U.S. bases in Bahrain. A senior Pentagon official added that American forces would be a greater risk if the U.S. were to initiate the strike and not Israel. But I think no matter what, Iran is sending a very clear message that every American asset in the region is on the table as soon as hostilities break out. We'll be right back.
Thanks for all your support. Today and tomorrow, the last days to get 100 times X entries into the amazing raffle, where both of the offerings of the Shelby Mustang and the awesome Ford off-road truck, when you get 100X for every dollar you spend on the store, put into the raffle, you get put in for just the next 2 days, all that's left, to get both vehicles. That ends tomorrow. Every order in the site for a very limited time is this hat. And this is a classic design that I put out on InfoWars like 20 years ago. And it's a ring of, 13 stars around 1776. It's simple, it's clean, and it's just exciting, and it spreads the word. So every order, on top of the sales that are already there, for a limited time, gets a free 1776 ball cap at thealexshowstore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We got a big show for you today, and I think we'll start with a sort of follow-up to a story we covered yesterday. We, of course, were reacting to the full deposition of Les Wexner, and a very curious instance when his lawyer leaned over and said, "I will effing kill you if you answer like that again." Little weird, little bizarre, little odd. And it was kind of such a strange thing just to hear and try to be like, wait, is this a real threat? Is he just talking like that? Like, what a odd thing to say. We didn't even ask, like, what was that in a response? What was that in response to? Why did he say that at that point? Like, what did Les Wexner say that inspired his lawyer to say, if you answer like that again, I will kill you? And so we have an answer for this. Clip 30, very interesting observation of what exactly he was saying when he was, jokingly or not, threatened with his life. Let's watch clip number 30 now.
I just found out why Les Wexner's lawyer said this. Because just before that, he was saying all of this. And I mean, get ready, because this is wild.
I talked to Ellie de Rothschild, and so I mentioned that earlier.
For context, he's about to be talking about Jeffrey right here.
He represented their whole family. So there have been a whole bunch of people that, I mean, most of them I never would have met, but I knew Ellie. But there were people that called me that either insinuated or said they were knew Jeffrey through a financial relationship. And so, I mean, they could have been actors, but at the time, a guy calls me up. I'll give you an example.
His attorney tries to stop him right here.
Because I want you to understand this. It's so confusing to me. He would say, like, I'm providing financial advice to the founders of Google. I'm providing financial advice to Jeff Bezos. I'm providing financial advice of the chief technologist at Google. Wow, I'm in good company, because these are really smart guys with a lot of money.
This is the best case scenario, really. They're all going after each other now. They're going after each other because they're throwing each other under the bus. And then they have nothing to lose, so they just say everything, because they know it doesn't matter if they don't say anything. He knows it doesn't matter if his attorney does what he says he's going to do. I mean, this guy's old anyway. This guy just name-dropped Jeffrey Epstein with the likes of Google, Jeff Bezos, and the Rothschilds. Yeah, I'd say he's probably in a situation where he knows that he has nothing to lose. And the thing with monsters is that they eat each other. Like and follow for more videos like this one.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Name dropping the Rothschilds, Jeff Bezos, and the head of Google right before his lawyer tells him, answer like that again and I'll effing kill you. Very, very interesting. Very interesting, in my opinion. And again, we're not going to spend the whole show on Jeffrey Epstein. I'm kind of sick of it at this point. It's been 2 weeks since the files were released. It's been 2 weeks, right? That sounded wrong when I said it. I feel like it's been 10 years. But let's go to clip 15 here, because this is Mike Benz breaking down how, well, really, the Trump administration, again, should have just owned this from the beginning. They should have been the ones releasing the Epstein files on purpose. And, but almost in like a serendipitous, I don't know, miraculous kind of way, by forcing Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie to write a bill over this, it really made it a lot worse for the people that were trying to keep it quiet. Let's go to clip number 15 now.
I do think that there was a miscalculation about this, and the staying power of the Epstein story is going to eventually force more concessions, as it already has through this bill. I think about this. Nobody wanted to be the one. Nobody wanted to be the Thomas Massie who has their whole career thrown up in the air, you know, getting primaried and hit pieces and, you know, disavowed, and then Marjorie Taylor Greene feeling like she had to drop out of Congress altogether over this. Nobody wanted to be the one to sponsor the bill, but nobody wanted to be the one to go against it once it was already sponsored. So you had the situation where everybody feared the higher power centers of the party to not sponsor that bill. But once the bill was sponsored and live to be voted on, everybody feared the base, that if they voted against it, they'd be voted out and it'd be held over their heads forever. And so the mere act of sponsoring the bill put the establishment in a bind. They would normally, obey donors or obey, you know, top-down directives. But once the bill was live and they had to answer forever how they voted on that bill, they were put to a point, and 427-1, it passed in the House and 99-0 in the Senate. So nobody was willing to bring it, but then once it was brought, nobody was willing to oppose it. The same thing can be done with all of this. I think that this is one of these moments where if you can use that same strategy, you could do that in theory, not just for the CIA and State Department files around Epstein. Who's going to vote against CIA declassification of COVID-19? All records, responsive to, you know, bioweapons research, the CIA, ODNI, DIA, NSA, all of that. Do it with Fast and Furious. Do it with Seth Rich's laptop. I'm inspired by what Thomas Massie has done. And given that, you know, they've already it's easy from the crowd to say this. I know this. I'm sure that when Thomas Massie walks back to his car at night or something, you know, he wonders, you know, okay, like, did I say too much today? But the fact is he's just opened the door to a very, revealing phenomenon, which is that our elected representatives at the end of the day feared the base more than they feared the top of the pyramid on this.
Yeah. So that is very interesting. And again, another victory for the info war and the true, you know, populist movement around the world. And really they've been hoisted by their own petard. They're constant double dealing and backstabbing and doublespeak is finally caught up to them, and they're kind of between a rock and a hard place and can't figure out a way to get out. It was too convenient to use the Epstein files as a, you know, political short-term football. And now they don't know what the hell to do on either side. And I think their solution to this turns out to be starting World War III. So we'll get to that in just a second. There's so many different ways to go. I think what I'll do is go to clip 10 here, and let me know when we can go to these videos. This is because this is also Mike Benz, and from the same interview from Tucker Carlson. And he's talking about what has led us to this point and the open conspiracy, the criminal cabal centered around Obama that is basically solely responsible for the last 10 years of division and political chaos in this country. And some pretty astonishing news has come out about this recently, despite the fact that the events are 10 years old. The news is breaking. Let's go to clip number 10 here. This is Mike Benz talking about sort of what has led us to where we are now. Let's watch.
The exact group behind the Transition Integrity Project, which explicitly plotted in the height of the George Floyd riots, ran a war game about how the Biden campaign, in case Trump won in a clear win scenario, clear Trump win was the name of their scenario, scenario three, this is in June 2020, how the Biden campaign could get racial justice activists from these riots to be, quote, receptive to a Biden call to take to the streets, and plotted what needed to be done to resource them and to cultivate relationships with Black Lives Matter's senior leadership and community leaders so that they would owe the Biden administration favors in case they need to be called on. And lo and behold, who pays them $50 billion? The Chamber of Commerce then flooded them with $50 billion in contributions. You remember that? All the different Chamber of Commerce companies just flooded billions of dollars of donations to BLM.
To destroy our country.
So again, it's really hard to overstate the damage that was done to us by the Biden administration. I don't think you can overstate it. And I'm just thinking of all, by opening the border, the Afghanistan withdrawal, again, like tons of refugees from that debacle. But all of that came 4 years after the Russiagate collusion hoax. I mean, Black Lives Matter, the racial crap we've had to go through, the rise in murder rates that occurred after defund the police, the discrimination that an entire generation of white males has faced as a consequence of the Black Lives Matter agenda, which is just means that, I mean, we will literally never know the true level of damage that's been done to us, because we have nothing to compare it to. We can't observe the other timeline where all of this crap didn't happen, where a generation of young white guys wasn't deliberately kept out of the corporate world, where we didn't open up the border to 20 to 30 million illegal immigrants in 4 years. We can only imagine what condition we would be in if all of this stuff hadn't happened. But it all goes back to Obama, the CIA, Russiagate, and everything flows downstream from that. And of course, all of that was in service of the war with Russia that had been planned for decades, and that they had to pull pretty, you know, amazing things off in order to stop Trump from getting in the way of their plans. The story is from @RealRobert on X. Here it is. Documents obtained through the Freedom of Information Act confirm Barack Obama's deadline, November 8, 2016, for the overthrow of the U.S. government, a high-ranking State Department official memo unearthed through open records litigation by the conservative group Citizens United. If there was ever an admission that obliterates Barack Obama's secret warrant to surveil Donald Trump's campaign, it sat buried for years in the files of a high-ranking State Department official. Deputy Assistant Director of State Kathleen Kavalex, written account of her October 11, 2016 meeting with FBI informant Christopher Steele shows that the Hillary Clinton campaign funded British intelligence operative admitted that his research was political and facing an election day deadline. That confession occurred just 10 days before the FBI used Steele's now piece of garbage dossier to justify securing a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act FISA warrant to surveil former President Trump's campaign advisor Carter Page and for the campaign's ties to Russia. Steele's client, Hillary Clinton, quote, is keen to see this information come to light prior to November 8th, the date of the 2016 election. Kavalec wrote in a typed summary of her meeting with Steele and Tatiana Duran, a colleague from Steele's Orbis security firm. Christopher Wray, FBI, released unredacted portions of Kavalec's memo, show she emailed 2 days after meeting Steele, You may already have this information, but wanted to pass it on just in case. Recipients' names, subject line, and attachments were redacted under National Security Act. The visible sentences indicate officials suspected Steele's motives were political, noting, quote, Orbis undertook the investigation into the Russia-Trump connection at the behest of an institution he declined to identify and that had been hacked. Now it's the DNC. In other words, the FBI, under Director Christopher Wray, classified the document as secret and, even worse, added this hopeful note, declassify on 12/31/2041. That would be 25 freaking years after the 2016 election. These notes provide written proof that the Obama administration knew of Barack Obama's treasonous motive on election day and election day deadline before the FBI obtained a FISA warrant. Okay, do we understand? Do we understand what it's saying? That on October 11th, 2016, there were meetings from an FBI there are notes from an FBI meeting with Chris Steele, Tatiana Duran of Orbis Security, where they noted that the Christopher Steele dossier, the Russia that kicked off and was the predicate for the Russiagate collusion hoax, all of the spying that went on, was known to be, have been created with a political motivation. Not out of genuine concern for the national security of America, but rather as a political ploy by the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton. And that despite knowing that, and you understand, like if they know that this was, that this information was gathered as part of a political hit job, then it's not valid or, you know, extremely questionable when it comes to using it to get warrants or anything of the sort, right? Because that's not a predicate that you want to start. You don't want to start using the DOJ to go after your political opponents by just going to their political opponents and say, give us whatever dirt you made up about this person, and then we'll use that to spy on the people with the assumption that they would find something. Remember, all of this was done with the assumption that Hillary Clinton would be elected and they would be able to cover up all of their malfeasance and they'd be able to use the warrants to spy on the Trump campaign to get dirt to keep him out of office or to screw him up once he was in office. Now, there wasn't actually any dirt to find, so that sort of messed up their whole operation. And then Donald Trump won, and that really put him into a tailspin. But now, nearly a decade later, we have undeniable proof, firsthand accounts from prior to the 2016 election, where it was acknowledged by everybody involved that they knew the source of the Christopher Steele dossier and used it illegally to obtain FISA warrants. Background: Orbis undertook the investigation into Russia/Trump connection at the behest of an institution he declined to identify and has been hacked. It's either the DNC or Hillary Clinton, but tomato tomato, right? The institution approached them based on the recommendation of Glenn Simpson and Peter Fritsch, specialist in economic crime, formerly of the Wall Street Journal, and is keen to see this information come to light prior to November 8th. Orbis undertook this investigation in June of 2016. So right after Donald Trump got the candidacy for the Republicans, yeah, they launched the fake investigation, fraudulent dossier in order to spy on the Trump campaign. Again, you know, I wish Democrats and our fellow Americans were capable of taking this in and understanding it and what it really means, because we keep hearing them expound and pontificate on their deep love of the American system and the horror that grips their heart if they even imagine somebody like Trump using the incredible powers of the United States presidency to benefit himself or his own political party. They keep telling us over and over again how they oppose that sort of thing on principle, and how, frankly, when that is the threat, anything is justified in trying to stop it. It's the death of democracy, after all, to imagine a president of the United States using the Department of Justice for naked political gain. It's unconscionable. It's unimaginable. Okay, that happened. It just happened under Obama. Do you still care about it? Or do you not care about anything and you're just pretending to have principles or beliefs at all because it's immediately convenient in going after Trump. I genuinely want to know. Because if what they've been shouting from the rooftops for the last 10 years has even an inkling of truth to it, sincerity to it, then they would be outraged at this and calling for blood. But they're not, because they're liars. And we are the only ones still to this day that actually genuinely care about the corruption in our country and the just flagrant misuse of presidential powers by the Democrats, which is very sad, which is a very sad thing when this affects all of us, and we should all be able to unify in opposition to the actuality of the imagined threat of the Democrats. Democrats are always imagining and fantasizing about a world that doesn't exist, in which Trump does things that Obama did for a decade. Can we please just care about the actual thing, for the love of God? But no, that's not actually going to happen. Now I want to go to clip number, let's go to clip number 15 here, just to close this out. And on the other side, I'm going to talk about just the generalized collapse that we're involved in. But for now, let's just remind ourselves who we're dealing with, what we're dealing with, and the psychological paradigm at work in the minds of humanity's enemies. Let's watch clip 15 here.
Leftism requires dehumanization. That is, the dehumanization of large groups of others. For instance, in order to validate abortion, you have to use dehumanizing language and essentially dehumanize the baby in the womb. In order to not have to contend with any right-wing policies or ideas, you can just lump them all into a category and call them Nazis and fascists, dehumanize them, which then makes instances like Charlie Kirk and the killing of anyone to the right of them okay. That's also why they feel so comfortable, you know, DMing people with awful violent threats or name calling, because they've just kind of marked you in the box in their mind as someone that's not human. This obviously stems from a lack of foundation from God. No foundation for inherent human worth. People really exist just to push their agenda or validate themselves and their lifestyle. And that's why there's such little shame around, like, such awful messages. Like, when I was receiving awful messages for, like, 3 days straight, just heinous death threats, awful comments, and I, you know, would maybe call them out on it, it would be like, there's no shame. There's no standard they hold themselves to, because, again, if you are going against their agenda, if you are threatening their lifestyle, if you are threatening them being in power, nothing's off limits to them. You would think that if they were the party that truly cared about others, that wanted peace, that was loving and tolerant, then this is not how they would present themselves. That they would present themselves as somebody who could have a conversation, as somebody that, you know, saw other people as human. Because then perhaps other people would take them seriously when they have, you know, ideas on social issues. But really, no one can take you guys seriously as far as policy or anything when this is how you act.
Yeah. And it's all together. And, you know, you would think that there's, like, you know, it would be nuanced. There would be, like, good things about the left and bad things about the left, good things about the right and bad things about the right. But the left is just incompetent, but they're also vicious. They're also dehumanizing. They're also actually the racist ones. And when they get in power, everything gets worse every single time, sometimes in, like, astronomical or catastrophic ways. There's no redeeming quality from the left. The only redeeming thing you could possibly point to is the words they say, because they sound nice, but those are just lies. So really, you're just pointing to another bad thing, the way they lie.
We've got to get to a point where we are self-sufficient again, Texas. And when it comes to health, also food, our food needs to be clean, number one. It just needs to be clean. And
Florida has pointed out, put that back on screen, all these major brands have got, like, you know, hundreds of times the glyphosate you should add.
Glyphosate.
Absolutely. Well, your doctor tells us what that does.
Oh, this is going to change your brain. This is going to set you up.
It erases your blood-brain barrier.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really an accelerant or an adjuvant.
Absolutely.
To everything in there. Explain that.
It destroys the blood-brain barrier. So that's a protective thing that happens between the cerebral spinal fluid and your fluids inside the brain. and the things that attack it from the outside. Once that barrier is depleted, then it's subject to all kinds of heavy metals, things that get sprayed from the sky, right? Barium, aluminum, all these things it protects you from. Why methylene blue works. It does. It counters that. It's.
Let me ask you that. 45 minutes in, you feel it, Doc?
Yeah, I feel pretty good.
Be honest, though. You got your own special brand. Is this good or what?
No, this is the same effect I'm getting, but it feels right. Yeah, it feels right. Yeah, it's a little easier to take. Yeah.
By easier, what do you mean compared
just
to?
Just the way it feels, you know, just going down, drinking it. But it's, yeah. It's.
So this one tastes better, but it's as good as the one your doctor gave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, so your doctor must have a good one.
We'll see. We'll go down the road a little ways. I'll text you.
Guys, get him a couple bottles of this. I need Doc Chambers endorsing this.
I'm not getting it for free, but I'll definitely help.
No, you're getting it down. Come on. Free your blood. It's amazing.
Hey, this is Doc Chambers here. I'm out in the field right now. Day off from the campaign trail doing some work. I got things to catch up on, so it's called a refit day. But I'm getting refit with Alex Jones's methylene blue. It's pretty good. I got to say, I've been using it on the road since we left the studios. And I've been taking it for a while. I had a traumatic brain injury in Iraq in 2004. There's been a lot of studies out there that show that with post-dementia patients and TBI patients, I've just been used for years. It's just not very well known with regard to demyelination, what it can do to improve your cognition. So that's your brain. Your brain housing these stuff. Hey, thanks, Alex. Appreciate you. We're going to stay on.
This methylene blue, it is tremendous. I would not be making this video if I didn't believe in it. After I take it throughout the day, I start feeling better and better and better. My workouts, I feel like I'm 15 years younger than I am. And the app that I record my running on proves that my workouts are getting better. So I got to tell you what, God, family, country, InfoWars, and methylene blue. Get it while you can.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Thanks for all your support. Today and tomorrow, the last days to get 100 times X entries into the amazing raffle where both of the offerings of the Shelby Mustang and the awesome Ford off-road truck, when you get 100X for every dollar you spend on the store, put into the raffle, you get put in for just the next 2 days, just all that's left, to get both vehicles. That ends tomorrow. Every order in the site for a very limited time is this hat. And this is a classic design that I put out on InfoWars like 20 years ago. And it's a ring of, 13 stars around 1776. It's simple, it's clean, and it's just exciting, and it spreads the word. So every order, on top of the sales that are already there, for a limited time, gets a free 1776 ball cap at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room, InfoWars.com, band.video. I was saying in the last segment, I have these multiple topics I want to get into, and they all relate, but it's almost like I'm trying to find the thread through them, how to present them to you, because there's multiple options. It's like each node connects to every other node in multiple ways. And so what we just heard was about how it is now, as if we needed more evidence, as if it wasn't obvious for the last 9 years already that the entire Russiagate collusion hoax was just that, and it was centered around Obama, and it was known to be false from the beginning, and that everything they did was predicated on blatant, abject lies that they themselves didn't believe. Like, we knew all of that. But the document we just showed you from October 11th, 2016 lays it out in black and white, excruciating detail, names, dates, times, what they were thinking. So we can sort of start there and look at just the immense damage that's been done to our country from the Russiagate collusion, which leads into the impeachment hoax, which leads into the fraud of the 2020 election, which of course is associated with COVID and Black Lives Matter and these riotous conditions, which leads to January 6th and the aggression and tyranny against Trump supporters throughout Biden's administration, which of course contained the opening of the floodgates just to completely wreck our country in an irrevocable way. It's a chain of events. It's a series of dominoes falling. One leads directly to the next. And where it's left us is on the cusp of total collapse. While at the same time, sort of putting this all into context and understanding this fully requires that we also acknowledge our immense power, that America is at this moment threatening to go to war with Iran using an unimaginable amount of resources and money and people and equipment. And so you have to understand these things aren't unrelated. They're actually related in a lot of ways. Same reason that we're going to war with Iran was motivating a lot of the same people that were trying to, you know, stop Trump from getting into office and making peace with Russia, right? The plan for World War III, Russia and Europe battling it out with each other over Ukraine while America fights Iran for the sake of Israel. Like, these plans have been long in place, and everything we've talked about up to this point is all in service of these things. But again, it's not enough to understand that America is not doing well. First, we have to understand that we could be. First, you have to understand how materially prosperous we truly are and how militarily powerful we truly are, because only then does our collapse come into focus. It would be easy to think that our collapse is inevitable or accidental, consequence of bad decisions that means everybody's suffering, but that's not the case. The collapse of America for the American people is on purpose. The collapse of the middle class, the collapse of our quality of life, the collapse of the ability of our social services, that's all deliberate, because simultaneous to that, our foreign adventures are funded to the ends of the earth. There's no problem with that. There's no interruption of service there. So it's not a matter of a natural, inevitable, you know, disaster that we have to try to cure or solve or mitigate in some way. These are choices being made, and you should really feel insulted and robbed when you know how much of your tax money is being stolen from you and you're not getting crap for it. And we're about to go to war with Iran and they're not even pretending that you're going to benefit for it. We're going to get into all that. So again, I have so much about Iran. I have so much about Israel. I have the Tucker Carlson, Mike Huckabee thing. I've got Trump giving statements. Some of the statements he makes are about the Middle East, but it's also about the tariffs. So I'm trying to like, but it's all related, but these are all like deeply, deeply intertwined. And I'm trying to get that across here. Let's go to clip 48 here just to lay the groundwork once again to understand truly how powerful, prosperous, and incredible the United States is. And then we'll compare that to, you know, the quality of life of our average citizen. But first, just a reminder of who we are. Let's watch.
We have the number one military in the world, but I don't think people really understand what that means. We have the number one Air Force in the world. Do you know what the number two Air Force in the world is?
China.
The United States Navy. Number three, China or Russia, if you believe their numbers. Number 4/5, Space Force. Three of the top five air forces in the entire world are us. The number one Navy in the world, us. Number 4 Navy in the world, us, our Coast Guard. And this doesn't have anything to say the 150 million Americans that are hunters. We're so much more powerful than anybody else. We're so, so, so much more powerful. We've been robbed, hollowed out by trillions of dollars, and still, nobody knows this.
Right.
Any other nation in the history of the world would have collapsed multiple times over. What our enemies, and this is just what I think, our enemies figured out that they can't beat us in traditional military matters. There's something called fifth generation warfare. It's psychological warfare. It's about depression and demoralization. Turn your children against their parents. Turn the women against the men. Turn the races against each other. And then allow moral decay to happen. Where all of us should be together and just marveling at this incredible society that we've built. And go on TV, go online. It's Civil War, blacks and whites, men and women, gays and straights. Then come out here into the real world.
Right.
Is any of that? Do you see any of it? Have you been in a restaurant? It's nonstop diversity. Everybody's chill. Everybody's cool. It's none of that. There's a huge schism between what they're telling us and how life really is. That's warfare.
So, in one regard, he's exactly right. Like, I pretty much don't disagree with him about anything that he's saying. However, the very end there, I think he's a little bit off. I mean, to a certain degree, he's right, right? You can go online and it looks like flame wars and dumpster fires. And then you go outside and it's all crickets and sunshine. So, you know, I get what he's saying. But at the same time, the outrage and the anger and the fury and the chaos and the unsettledness that people are feeling is very real. And it's not some small thing. Yeah, Gerard Michaels, that's who this was. Why no country can defeat the U.S. in a real war. Again, he's exactly right. And he's definitely right about the fact that America can't be beat unless we beat ourselves. Unless we defeat ourselves, we cannot be defeated. However, we're defeating ourselves. We are being defeated internally. And the average American needs to wake up to this and not take it. And understand, first and foremost, and this is in contradiction to the demoralization campaign that tells you, oh, everything's terrible, it's only getting worse, and there are forces beyond your control. The reality is the exact opposite. The reality is that these bad conditions aren't something that just happen and that nobody can stop and that people in power are trying to, you know, fight back against, but gosh, just, you know, impossible. No, no, these are choices made. These are deliberate attacks against you. The quality of life for you going down is the desired outcome of the people putting the policies into place. You need to understand that. And I've said this same refrain for years on end, talking about how things don't just happen. It's sort of the first step of being a conspiracy theorist, is when you look around and you realize nobody in my neighborhood looks like me or even speaks my language. When you look around and think everything is just getting worse and my hometown is unrecognizable, what they want you thinking is, and I better get used to that. What they want you thinking is, and, you know, I better leave, or I better just, you know, try to get my own because, you know, everybody else is doing that. What they don't want you doing is understanding this is an organized attack against you, and that by organizing a counterattack, you can get back to the way things were. One of the most pernicious concepts, sort of just adopted unconsciously, subconsciously by the American people, is this idea that there's a direction that history is going. And it's, you know, put out by the so-called progressives, right? That's what the word means, is that you're progressing in a certain direction. And they sort of act like they really believe that. Like any sort of liberalizing, democratizing policy they can put forward is permanent and it will always remain and it'll only get, you know, bigger and worse from here. Better, I guess, from their perspective. That's not true at all. There's absolutely no, you know, law of nature that says we have to go that way. In fact, the more we progress down the progressive timeline, the worse everything gets. So it's just a matter of recognizing, acknowledging what is pushing us down this road and then consciously opposing these forces. It's not hard. It's just, you have to do it. You have to have the will. We just don't have the will. So let's look at how America is going, shall we? Let's go to clip number 17 here, because this represents the absolute and total breakdown of the fundamental fabric of our society. It represents an end to the social contract as we know it. And again, we are progressing through time in a way where this type of stuff is becoming more and more common, and it will become the norm if we continue to progress this way. Like, we are on a trajectory right now, but that trajectory is not inevitable. We can change direction at any point by choosing to do so, but we have to choose to do so. And so things are getting worse. This is going to be more and more common, what you're about to hear. And what we have to decide is not to change ourselves and our lives and our point of view to comport with the new horrifying and untenable reality, Rather, we have to seize control of the levers of power and set things right, regardless of who cries about us doing so. So we're going to listen to this recording. It is a 911 dispatch call from a young woman who has been assaulted by an ex-boyfriend, and the ex-boyfriend is trying to break into the house, and the 911 dispatcher says, nothing we can do. Let's watch.
911 emergency.
My ex-boyfriend is trying to break into my house. I'm not letting him in, but he's, like, tried to break down the door, and he's trying to break into one of the windows. He put me in the hospital a few weeks ago, and I've been trying to keep him away. I told him I was going to call. He's now trying to break in through the window. He's trying to jimmy it open.
Okay. Do you have anybody else in the house with you?
No, I don't.
Okay. Does he live there?
No, he does not.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. I don't have anybody to send out there.
Okay.
You know, obviously, if he comes inside the residence and assaults you, can you ask him to go away, or do you know if he's intoxicated or anything?
I've already asked him. I've already told him I was calling you. He's spoken before, busted down my door, assaulted me.
Uh-huh.
Is there any way
you can safely leave the residence?
No, I can't, because he's blocking pretty much my only way out.
With a vehicle, or?
With the vehicle and with himself on my front door also.
Okay, is there anybody that you can call to come over and help you, or do you have any friends?
He has sat there and destroyed my phone that had all of my contacts in it, because I have neighbors, because he's done this. I can't get a hold of my neighbors. I don't know what the phone numbers are. I just had to get a new phone.
Okay. Well, the only thing I can do is give you some advice and call the sheriff's office tomorrow. Obviously, if he comes in and unfortunately has a weapon or is trying to cause you physical harm, that's a different story. You know, the sheriff's office doesn't work up there. I don't have anybody to send.
Okay.
And we don't dispatch for him. Like I said, it's an unfortunate situation.
Okay. But I'll have to take care of myself, I guess.
Well, you have every right to do that. I can't tell you what to do, but is he still there?
Yes, he is.
Okay. All right. Well, do you want to stay on the phone with me until we figure out what he might do, or can you ask him to leave?
I've asked him to leave a million times.
Okay, but he does not live there with you. Is that what you're saying?
He does not.
Okay. Has he lived there previously?
No.
Okay. Where is he now?
He's now outside my bedroom window.
Does he know that you're on the phone?
I don't know. If I can hear him screaming and yelling, I think he can hear me on the phone. I told him I was going to.
Okay.
Because he doesn't care. He doesn't care because he knows that no one's out here, and so.
Yeah, and like I said, it's definitely unfortunate. What's his name?
Michael Bella.
B-E-L-L-A?
B-E-L-L-A-H.
And how old is he?
He's 29.
Is he a white male?
Yes.
Do you know if there's anybody with him?
Oh, no, there's no one with him.
When did you guys break up?
We have broken up 5 billion times, and put me in the hospital a few weeks ago, and I've been trying to keep him away.
Do you have a restraining order?
I do not, because he would leave me alone until basically on the weekends, and then he starts his crap again.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty harrowing stuff. By the way, what is a restraining order going to do? Nothing. The cops aren't showing up. So, you know, what is there to say? Like, I hope you have a gun. I bet the cops show up if gunshots start going off. That might be the only way to get them to respond. You can almost... It's like we're witnessing in real time as civilization collapses. The services that we are accustomed to always be there, we don't even think about it. Like, these things aren't permanent. Like, there's no law that says every time you call 911, somebody's going to come help you. It's what I keep trying to explain. our civilization built these like amazing things that we just take for granted. But like as we slip down towards collapse, they're going to go away. And you can almost hear as like the advancements of civilization get pulled back and we return to sort of the status quo of the world before the Enlightenment and all these wonderful systems that we have to protect us, where the dispatcher says, well, do you have any friends? You have any friends? You have a older brother or a father, perhaps, that could come help you? In other words, do you have a tribe? Do you have a clan that will take on your protection? Because as a society, we don't provide for that anymore. And at the same, on the same day that that audio gets released, there's a situation in the UK where a woman at 2:30 in the morning hears somebody trying to get in her house, and she starts filming. And this is what she films, clip number one. This is a woman at 2:30 in the morning in the UK, and this is what she woke up to. Let's watch. Yeah. Weren't expecting that, were you? For our radio listeners, it is a man staring through her window. No, he's just... Nice, up close and personal with it. And just looking her right in the eyes, dead-eyed, as he's trying to open her door. And just staring at her. So, another metaphor for civilization. It's absolutely horrifying. Now imagine being a young woman and calling the cops. Going, there's a man staring through my window at me. And they're like, well, call us back in the morning if you survive. So yeah, as our systems break down, you're going to have a clan or a tribe or, you know, self-defense measures. Of course, we're still in this in-between period of anarcho-tyranny where the cops will not come out to stop the murderer from getting in your house and trying to kill you. But if you kill him, you bet your ass they will charge you with homicide and try to throw you in jail for the rest of your life. Just a little warning for you. As we go to war with Iran, as we send $1 trillion of military equipment to the Middle East, we can't even call 911 and have cops show up to protect young women who are actively being attacked by their ex-boyfriends. We can't keep the lights on, but somehow we have the resources and ability to project power across the entire world for reasons that aren't even pretending are for our benefit. We don't have to take this. There's absolutely no reason that this has to be the situation. Or let's go to clip number two. This is what it's like for probably most American families, especially if you're in a big city. This is, again, the way our government treats us, its regular citizens, while meanwhile, Somali daycare fraud is raking in millions of dollars and we're performing miracles for some reason in Venezuela to attacking Maduro. Like, all of our focus is on all of these other things. Meanwhile, this is what it's like for an average American just trying to raise their kids. Clip two.
I'm about to ask what I'm not supposed to ask. Why is one of my children in a class where she's one of four kids that speaks English in math, and she doesn't get to learn math because there's 20 plus other kids who don't know English and the teacher has to accommodate them? And I'm not blaming the teacher. I actually feel really bad for the teachers. Why? Why am I paying property taxes? Why am I paying income tax? Why am I paying taxes for anything for my children to have the right to a free and public education, which, by the way, they constantly are trying to take the ability for us to homeschool and all that stuff away to make them go to public school. But then when they go to public school, this is what they get. You don't get to learn math because you know English, so you just don't get to learn math. What?
Again, I've talked endlessly. This is happening in Austin schools as well, where the Afghanistan refugees came in, and now they're 90% of the school. And so most of the class day is spent on just teaching these kids English. Meanwhile, the American kids are just not learning anything, are just having years of education wasted, their potential, you know, gutted for life because we're serving people that just provide nothing to us, nothing. Again, it would be different. You know, you talk about some, a place like Qatar, where 90% of the people who live in Qatar are not Qatari. It's 90% foreigners, 10% natives. But every foreigner who goes to Qatar provides something to them, benefits their society somehow. If all these Afghan refugees were coming in with $1 million and were making their own schools and providing jobs, then great. But no, they bring nothing. And we not only give them everything, give them electric, give them education, and then, by the way, hire their parents because they're the only ones in the community who can speak the language. So we give them jobs and we educate their children. Meanwhile, we're paying for all of it and our kids aren't even getting educated. And this is all on the systemic level. Meanwhile, endless acts of violence and just deconstruction on an individual basis that you won't even hear about because the media is incentivized to cover it up. Let's go to clip number three here. One of like a dozen instances that have happened in the last like 4 days of black people randomly assaulting and killing entire families of white people or white children. Let's go to clip three here.
Hi, quick question for you. Do you know who this is? Do you know who this girl is? No? Well, let me fill you in. This is Alexander Lamar Banks Jr., and he was just arrested in Michigan after he targeted a white family with his car, running over the 3-year-old daughter, then getting out with a shotgun and shooting the parents. Harlow Smith, the 3-year-old daughter, was unfortunately killed in the attack. The parents are both in the hospital, and their condition has stabilized. And if that wasn't bad enough, 72-year-old Barbara heard a commotion outside, so she decided to go and investigate, and upon witnessing this horrific act, went to help the Smith family. Unfortunately for her, she happened to be in Alexander's field of view, and so she became his next victim. Barbara was beaten, bloodied, and concussed, suffering severe head trauma and even bleeding in her brain. She ended up needing emergency brain surgery, and as I record this video, the surgery was a success, but Barbara is unconscious. And the mainstream media won't touch this story with a 10-foot pole. There are reports coming out from residents in Michigan saying they're not even seeing it on their local news. And we all know the reason why. It's because this is the perpetrator, and these are his victims. We all know that if a deranged white man targeted a family because they were black, ran over their child, and then brutally assaulted all of the people in the
vicinity. Yes, of course, it would be a giant story for weeks on end, and we'd have to like overthrow the government or something. It's not okay just to say that anymore. Like, so systemically, we're being destroyed, and there's just a million quotidian examples of just families being ripped apart and murdered and not even being reported on. And then you have things like this, adult milestones. These are shares of 30-year-olds who have achieved major life milestones, and you can see the collapse.
Today and tomorrow, the last days to get 100 times X entries into the amazing raffle. It only happens every few months where both of the offerings of the Shelby Mustang and the awesome Ford off-road truck, 100X for every dollar you spend on the store, put into the raffle. You get put in for just the next 2 days, is all that's left, to get both vehicles. There's a time where there's a crossover for 1 week. That ends tomorrow. Every order in the site for a very limited time, it's probably just last throughout the weekend, I'm told, because is this hat. And this is a classic design that I put out on InfoWars like 20 years ago. I noticed everybody else copied it, which is cool. I just go, why don't we have that classic design back? So they brought it back, and it's a ring of, 13 stars around 1776. And it's simple, it's clean, and a leftist probably won't kill you or murder you for it. You know, if you have like a MAGA or InfoWars hat, that's a real adventure. This is just at the airport or wherever, the store, hey, patriots know. And it's just exciting, spreads the word. So every order, on top of the sales that are already there, for a limited time, gets a free 1776 ball cap at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the store, become a VIP for $30 a month. You can cancel any time for free. Instantly, you get $40 to spend each month. The minute you click that button for $30, you get $40 to spend. Special deals, special offers, special sales, top everything. So anybody buying anything should be a VIP. And it's really no commitment. You just get better deals. Cancel any time for free. One click in your profile. Everyone should be a VIP. Also, sometimes stuff runs out and sells out. Don't want to happen? Become a subscriber. Cancel any time. They hold it back for you at the biggest discounts as well. Become a VIP. Become a subscriber. But regardless, share the live feeds of the show. Tell folks about those local AM and FM stations, cable stations, because that's how we reach new people, and that's how we change the world. The whole globalist house of cards is coming down. We've been vindicated. You've been vindicated. Nothing's going to stop that. Stay with us. Massive guest straight ahead.
Back, folks. Again, if there's one set of charts that shows the collapse in real time, this is adult milestones. This is a percentage of 30-year-olds who have achieved certain milestones living on their own, and it's the comparison between 1983 and 2023. So in 40 years, you can see an absolute collapse in the number of people who at age 30 live on their own, have ever been married, own a home, or live with a child, meaning that we're not progressing. We're not building families. We're not creating lineages. We're not building generational wealth. We're not doing anything. We're just working just as hard, scrimping just as much, laboring away just as intensely as previous generations. We're just not getting anything for it. It's all being robbed from us before it can be turned into something permanent and valuable. And it's on purpose. Let's go to clip 18 here. This is a very common argument made. I first heard Thomas Sowell make it. And it's so simple and obvious, it really makes you wonder how people are able to discount it and just continue to do what they're doing already. It's the problem with affirmative action, the problem with DEI, the problem with diversity for diversity's sake. Let's watch.
It's really a cruel thing for anybody to be catapulted into an environment for which he's not competitively qualified. They don't do well. And this is the same thing if for gender preferences. If MIT admitted me with math SATs of 650 on an 800-point scale because they felt they needed more gender diversity in their engineering class because there weren't enough females there, as if I care about the sex of somebody that is building a bridge that I want to get across safely, all I care is that the best possible engineer for that job. But MIT has different ideas and thinks the gonads of engineers matter to their competence. So it admits me with 650 on an 800-point scale on math, and my peers who've been admitted based on merit, not gonads, all have 800s. I am going to struggle in my math classes in freshman year because I've been admitted to a peer group that is more academically qualified than I am. Now, I can still go to engineering school. I should go with students that also average 650, and my freshman calculus class and my freshman engineering and chemistry class will be pitched to my level of academic preparedness. But if I'm sent into MIT, it's frankly going to be hell on earth, because I'm going to be behind, and lo and behold, what happens? The diversity bureaucrats show up and tell me, if you're feeling out of place, if you're struggling, if you're not doing as well as your peers, it's because you're in a rape culture. It's because you're in a patriarchy. It's because you are surrounded by a female hostile environment. They're not going to be honest and say, no, it's because you've been catapulted into an academic environment for which you are not competitively qualified. Now, the argument is always, but they'll do better. They'll catch up. They don't. It would be nice if they did, but they don't catch up. They struggle. It is cruel. It is an act of narcissism and ego on the part of these college administrators who only care about the photos that show up on their college website and making sure that they're suitably diverse, and do not care about the fate of black students who have been admitted.
So, again, she's exactly right, except they don't just care about how the photos look on their website. They're in a war against white people, and they think that tearing us down or building themselves up are basically the same. All that matters is comparatively they do better than us. So, now they care a lot. They care about destroying white people, and they're succeeding. You don't have to take it.
I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in, and they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives. These bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is Forest Green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get some ultramethylene blue.
What do you got there, Angel Eyes?
It's a new Patriot Silver folding knife from thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, Blondie, look at me. I got all three.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on the War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Let me tell you right now that it is your last chance to get 100 times entries and your last chance to win one of the two vehicles and $20,000 from thealexjonesstore.com. Every dollar you spend gets you 100 times entries. In other words, every penny you spend at thealexjonesstore.com gets you an entry to win one of these two incredible cars, the Ford F-250 diesel. That raffle ends tonight. The Ford Mustang Shelby GT500 will continue for another week, but tonight is your last chance to get both of the get entries into both of these drawings. Somebody's got to win the car. So somebody listening to my voice right now, going to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, somebody's going to win it. Might as well be you, but you got to go now and buy something from thealexjonesstore.com. Of course, we make it easy for you to do so because every order gets a free 1776 hat. And it's a very cool design. It's not, you know, sometimes people do giveaways where it's something that you would never buy anyway. No, this is like a best-selling hat. It's like a very cool hat. We could sell it for probably $30 if we wanted to, but we're giving it to you for absolutely free with any purchase from thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. If you want to let them know who sent you and you have until midnight tonight to be entered to win both cars and $20,000, you got to go today, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. And with that, we'll move on here and talk about Iran, I guess, and Israel, I guess. We have a lot to cover in this hour before we welcome Tiffany Cianci. And I want to talk about tariffs as well, although I know she's going to have a lot to say about that. But I think let's finish off with the coverage that we've been sticking with, because I got a few more videos here. Because slowly but surely, the tide is turning, and white people are learning to defend themselves. It's a beautiful thing, really. It's all we've ever called for here at InfoWars. It's just for white people to act like everybody else acts. Just stop committing suicide. Stop acting like being taken advantage of is moral. Stop acting like being screwed over and attacked and destroyed somehow is deserved and you're a good person for putting up with it. We just need to break out of this hypnosis. Doesn't mean that you hate anybody. Doesn't mean that you want other races not to do well. It's literally just about applying the exact same level of consideration for every other people group. Just apply it to yourself. It's really not that hard. It's just hard because of the normalization of really vicious anti-white sentiment the world over. in the UK, this is particularly heinous because, you know, at least in America, we do have a history of immigration, right? Our country never existed without a sizable population of not white, non-European people. So, you know, the arguments about, you know, an ethnicity that has a claim to this land, yeah, I mean, it's a little debatable. Doesn't mean white people are colonizers that deserve to be driven off the land, obviously. It just is a little bit of a different situation than you might find somewhere like Ireland or England, where there's no nuance or debate or discussion about it. I mean, the natives of those lands are white. They're the white natives of Europe. That's who's always been there. If they don't have that homeland, they don't have a homeland. So there's no other option. So Rupert Lowe, who just started the Restore Britain Party, has come out and taken a big step towards, you know, white self-esteem or whatever you might call it. And this is very good to see. And we, you know, congratulate Europe for producing a single leader willing to actually speak out for the concerns of the people they're supposed to be the leaders of. Let's go to clip 23 here. This is Rupert Lowe with a message for young white men. Let's watch.
To the young white men who feel ignored and insulted, I want to speak directly to you. For too long, young white men in this country have been treated as if your concerns don't matter, your struggles don't count, and your identity is something to apologize for. That your love of your country is somehow racist and wrong. You've been told to stay quiet, to step aside, to accept being blamed for things you never did and problems that you didn't create. Let me be clear. There is nothing wrong with being white. There is nothing wrong with being man. There is nothing wrong with being straight. You are not the problem. The system is the problem. The cancer of DEI, along with the Blairite legacy, must be eradicated and erased from our society. Britain needs strong, grounded, responsible men. Men and women who work hard, protect their communities, build their families, and stand firm in their values. And despite what some might tell you, there's nothing shameful about wanting to be that person. We should be unapologetic in our promotion of those ideals. I say to you today, keep going. It will get better.
So again, an absolutely positive message that young men absolutely need to hear. And, you know, like young, it's a message obviously aimed towards and for the benefit of young white people, young white men in particular, but really, you know, non-whites need to hear it as well. I'll show you why in just a second. But once again, I'm dissatisfied. I'm happy. I'm glad it's getting, you know, towards where we should be. But the problem is, like, where society is now is so far from where we should be that, yeah, movements towards the right direction we'll celebrate and are positive, but we have a long way to go. And in a way, you know, we just need to take everything that Benjamin Netanyahu and the ADL say about Jewish people and just apply it to white people. How many times have you heard Benjamin Netanyahu give speeches in the last month or so where he says, just to be against anti-Semitism is not enough? Yeah, you have to fight against it. You have to be proactive. You have to actively go out and be philo-Semitic, I guess. That's kind of how we need to be. Like, yeah, okay. The message, like, you shouldn't be ashamed for being white is a good one. But why would you even say that? Of course you shouldn't be ashamed for being white. That should go without saying. No, you should be proud of being white. No, you need to take it a step farther. We don't need to be telling young white men that it's okay, that it's fine that they are who they are. That, like, it's not that bad. Like, you don't need to apologize. No. What you need to be telling young white men is, young white men, you are the inheritors of the greatest inheritance the world has ever seen. That the vast majority of intellectual, scientific, even religious developments on the face of the earth have all come from young white men. Young white men are the engine of growth and progress and advancement the world over, and have been for all of time. It's not just okay to be white. It's fantastic. It's amazing. Okay, so I'm gonna keep pushing in that direction, and hoping everybody comes along in our wake. But you got to understand that the subtle but important difference between you don't need to be ashamed for who you are, and hey, who you are is amazing and fantastic, and you should be proud of who you are. And really, that's the insinuation anyway. Anyway. The insinuation of, like, you have to be sorry, you know, feel bad is, like, literally because, like, your race was so unbelievably successful and powerful that, like, it makes other people feel bad. Again, it's kind of like an inverted white supremacy where it's like, ooh, I'm white, sorry. Sorry. Like, I don't know, you ever succeed wildly in something that your friend didn't and you feel kind of bad? You don't want to go brag, right? You want to kind of feel sorry for him. So we need to get over that. We can absolutely get over that. And here's why. Clip 49 here. Because white people have, many of them have been convinced to simply give up their history and their heritage, to think that it's bad, and to go along with people telling them that, oh, you're the evil ones, you're the divisive ones, just get rid of your history and then we can all be together. Like, that was always a lie, obviously, and people are stupid and fell for it, or have just had their heritage deliberately stolen from them against their will. Like, the Black Lives Matter tearing down statues that everybody in the community other than them wanted up and reflected their past and ancestors and everything else. And so we've had our history and heritage demonized and stolen from us. And now you got foreigners coming in and looking around and going, there's no history or heritage here. I guess they don't care. Let's go to clip 49 now.
The United States still is a migrant community, with due respect to the Native Americans. It's a new society. So it has, doesn't have the same traditions, religions, and same monuments, for example, that you can go back and say, oh, this is the, you know, Christian emperor so-and-so did. So that's why U.S. provides much more of a broad space for adaptation and assimilation. So it is, in a sense, immigrant society, and very, being American means being everything, a little bit of everything.
They don't even have monuments. You tore them all down. So they'll tear down the monuments and then say, look, they don't even have monuments. They don't have a history or a culture. There's nothing to assimilate to. We're all a little bit of everything. So it's not a matter of even like ego, like feeling good about yourself or whatever else. It's an existential thing. Actually, this is an existential thing that, like, I feel like we really need to go hard on, because whether we like it or not, we're a collective. And when a bunch of my fellow white people feel bad about themselves, it puts me in danger. So, like, y'all got to get over this. Y'all got to get over thinking you're better than everybody else and feeling sorry for everybody. They hate you and are trying to kill you. Stop feeling sorry for them. Jesus. Let's go to clip 24 here, because there is growing backlash to this. There's a growing sentiment of what I'm talking about developing around the world. And so, some people who have contributed mightily to the anti-white agenda are now sort of reversing course, sort of moderating their position. And we're seeing this across the board with Hillary Clinton and Klaus Schwab. They're all saying, well, maybe this migrant thing isn't such a big deal. You know, maybe we did overdo it with the migrants. Maybe, you know, giving some credence to that argument. And here we have Sam Harris, noted libtard, a brain-broken, TDS-suffering moron, atheist, pseudo philosopher. And he actually gets in an argument with Don Lemon because he's, you know, recognizing the severe disadvantage that white people face in our own countries, and he's choosing to acknowledge it. I don't trust him for a single second. I think this is a purely, like, cynical and Machiavellian strategy shift. I don't think Sam Harris has woken up and seen the light. It would have been nice for him at any point in the last 10 years, 20 years that he's been a public intellectual, to, you know, defend against the heinous blood libels against white people and the, you know, underlying societal conditions that has led to our dispossession. Sort of too little too late for old Sam Harris to be sounding off about this, but better late than never, right? Let's go to clip 24.
No one was more disadvantaged based purely on the superficial characteristics of skin color than white men for a very long time getting into high status. Now, I'm not saying racism doesn't exist. I'm not saying there are no disadvantages to black men.
You don't believe that, do you?
Oh, it's obviously
look
true.
At the numbers. The numbers don't bear that out. That's not
the
true.
I operate in a circle of
a lot of white people who attend Ivy League schools. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the folks whose kids are attending these schools have endowment. They give money to the schools. They put libraries in the schools.
Legacy is also another corruption of the system. Yeah.
And I barely, if ever, see a black person among them. Rarely.
Okay. If you look at the numbers,
the numbers are not there. Look at the representation of white men and black women in every type of business.
We have to be systematic in how we talk about this, Don, because the facts are there for anyone to find in terms of, I mean, just if you're going to ask yourself, you know, like internships at the New York Times, who has gotten those internships, right? The first rung on the ladder in recent years. And you look at the percentages that go to white men versus
all white kids who have
not true.
Who,
it's absolutely not
Sam,
true.
Sam, it is. I work in the media business. Okay, well, it is true.
There's been research done on this. Someone who comes from a legacy, or someone who can pick up the phone.
So I mean, you know, Don Lemon's obviously just lying. We've seen the charts, and you know, this has been a rapid shift, right? So nowadays, we've seen 93%+ of all executive positions went to non-white people. Deliberately, they celebrate it. They brag about this. Obviously, it's going to take a couple years for the, you know, old legacy people to drop out, but the damage has already been done. And the white people who would be on a path to success and building careers are not doing that anymore. They've been shuffled off to lower level positions, despite being qualified for the higher level position ones because of the racial makeup that they want to decide. I also think it's valuable in times like this to differentiate between people with white skin, as Sam Harris puts it, and white Christian Europeans versus Jews, because that can throw the whole thing off, right? And, you know, whatever, the language is imperfect or whatever, because Jewish people obviously have white skin. However, if you say, oh, there's a, you know, this is all white males, but it's all a bunch of Jewish people who are considered minorities and a different ethnicity and have all of the same benefits as any of the other minorities over white people. Like, then it's a little bit different. And this especially comes into play with things like Sam Harris was talking about, or Don Lemon was talking about, who goes to Ivy League schools. And again, this is why this is important to take on head on and to not mitigate or qualify these statements about like, well, but I'm not a white supremacist, but I do think it's like, no, we got to get rid of all that and be done with all of that. Because what happens is the fear of supporting white people, the fear of advocating for white interests means that we can't solve problems that are predicated on attacking white identity. This is the perfect example for it. Trump DOJ sues Harvard for withholding race-related admission docs. The U.S. Civil Rights Division filed a lawsuit against Harvard University on Friday, alleging the school unlawfully withheld admissions-related information that federal officials say they needed to determine whether Harvard is complying with federal civil rights law following the Supreme Court's 2023 decision in Students for Fair Admissions versus President and Fellows of Harvard College. In the complaint, the government says it opened compliance reviews in April 2025 covering Harvard College, Harvard Medical School, and Harvard Law School to assess whether the university continues to discriminate on the basis of race in admissions, a violation of Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Title VI bars race, color, and national origin discrimination in programs receiving federal financial assistance. Under President Trump's leadership, the Department of Justice is demanding better from our nation's educational institutions, said Attorney General Pam Bondi. Long story short, they refused to say white people are being discriminated against, so they chose to champion Asian students, because Asian students are also discriminated against, and it's more socially safer to support Asians, because in America, they're technically a minority. And so what Harvard did was they stopped discriminating against Asian people and started discriminating against white people even more. Do you see the problem? That, like, when you're afraid to actually advocate for white people and you just say, well, we just don't want any discrimination. It's not about white people. No, we don't want anybody being discriminated against. It's like, okay, well, they're only discriminating against two types of people, Asians and whites. And you refuse to acknowledge the considerations of white people. So you only advocate for Asian people. So they stop getting discriminated against, but white people get discriminated against to an even greater degree. It's absolutely infuriating. Harvard was so upset when told they couldn't racially discriminate, they decided to be more vindictive and racially discriminate only against white Americans. They dropped admissions of whites by 16%. Their own data shows in a merit system, whites would be 50% of the freshmen. Instead, they like hardly show up. So that's what happens when you refuse to champion white people. White people get screwed over. They're like, well, we got to go, you know, stop discrimination. Harvard's like, oh, okay. And then white enrollment drops 16%. And then everybody that they did bring in that wasn't technically qualified but boosted because of their skin color, they can't quite make the grade that they used to. So the entire institution is degraded overall. Because you have to, you know, round the test up a little bit more, you know, provide a little bit of a little boost for the grades so that your whole diversity experiment doesn't blow up in your face and prove that you're incapable of, you know, choosing the right people for matriculation. It destroys the whole system. It destroys the whole institution. It degrades it imperceptibly, but, you know, by steps over time until why do we even have colleges? There's extended daycares. Ridiculous. Harvard did not stop discriminating by race. It simply stopped doing so against Asians. Affirmative action continues, but now it's entirely at the expense of one race instead of two. Since the ruling was issued, the share of Asians in Harvard's freshman class has gone up from 26% of the class in 2025 to 41% of the class in 2029, but the share of whites has gone down. White students were 47% of freshmen in the class of 2025 and approximately 31% in the classes of 28 and 29. Harvard publishes percentage of every race but white in those years, and 8% of each class reported no race, making the white share a matter of inference. Black and Latino share has stayed roughly the same with small fluctuation. So Harvard did not stop discriminating by race. It simply stopped doing so against Asians. Affirmative action continues, but now it's entirely at the expense of white people instead of white people and Asians. And then you have to wonder how many of those white people are Jews. Do they get counted separately? And if not, then you're not only talking about a 16% drop in admissions, you're probably talking about a much more significant one. And of course, Jews are overrepresented in all Ivy League, but I don't see a lot of complaints about that. And you don't see a lot of complaints about black people or Hispanic people being overrepresented anywhere. If we wanted to actually take their absurd, nonsensical, frankly retarded worldview seriously and sincerely, then Harvard would have to get rid of a bunch of black people because they're overrepresented. They're only 13% of this country, but they occupy like 20% of the university. So that's bad, right? That's bad because it doesn't reflect the population. Or are we going with the population of the world, and so white people are actually a vanishingly small minority and should basically be gatekept from anything that our ancestors built? So yeah, stop offloading your, you know, white protection on Asians. It doesn't work.
We've got to get to a point where we are self-sufficient again, Texas. And when it comes to health, also food, our food needs to be clean, number one. It just needs to be clean.
Florida has pointed out, put that back on screen, all these major brands have got, like, you know, hundreds of times the glyphosate you should have.
Glyphosate.
Absolutely. Well, your doctor tells us what that does.
Oh, this is gonna change your brain. This is going to set you up.
It erases your blood-brain barrier.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really an accelerant or an adjuvant.
Absolutely.
Everything in there. Explain that.
It destroys the blood-brain barrier. So that's a protective thing that happens between the cerebral spinal fluid and your fluids inside the brain. And the things that attack it from the outside. Once that barrier is depleted, then it's subject to all kinds of heavy metals. Things that get sprayed from the sky, right? Barium, aluminum. All these things that it protects you from. Why methylene blue works. It does, it counters that.
Let me ask you that. 45 minutes in, you feel it, Doc?
Yeah, I feel pretty good.
Be honest, though. You got your own special brand. Is this good or what?
No, this is the same effect I'm getting, but it feels right. Yeah, it feels right. Yeah, it's a little easier to take. Yeah.
By easier, what do you mean? Compared
just
to
the way it feels, you know, just going down, drinking it. But
So this one tastes better, but it's as good as the one your doctor gave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, so your doctor must have a good one.
We'll see. We'll go down the road a little ways. I'll text you.
Guys, get him a couple bottles of this. I need Doc Chambers endorsing this.
I'm not getting it for free, but I'll definitely help.
No, you're getting it down. Come on. Free your blood. It's amazing.
Hey, this is Doc Chambers here. I'm out in the field right now. Day off from the campaign trail doing some work. I got things to catch up on, so it's called a refit day. But I'm getting refit with Alex Jones's methylene blue. It's pretty good. I got to say, I've been using it on the road since we left the studios, and I've been taking it for a while. I had a traumatic brain injury in Iraq in 2004. There's been a lot of studies out there that show that with post-dementia patients and TBI patients, it's just been used for years. It's just not very well known with regard to demyelination, what it can do to improve your cognition. So that's your brain. Your brain housing these stuff. Hey, thanks, Alex. Appreciate you. We're going to stay on.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Thanks for all your support. Today and tomorrow, the last days to get 100 times X entries into the amazing raffle where both of the offerings of the Shelby Mustang and the awesome Ford off-road truck, when you get 100X for every dollar you spend on the store, put into the raffle, you get put in for just the next 2 days, just all that's left, to get both vehicles. That ends tomorrow. Every order in the site for a very limited time is this hat. And this is a classic design that I put out on InfoWars like 20 years ago. And it's a ring of, 13 stars around 1776. It's simple, it's clean, and it's just exciting, and it spreads the word. So every order, on top of the sales that are already there, for a limited time, gets a free 1776 ball cap at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. We're going to be joined by Tiffany Cianci in the next hour. I know I'm going to talk about tariffs with her, but I want to show you a couple statements that were made and give you the rundown on what exactly is happening with the tariffs. And then I want to move on to the looming war with Iran that we're all so excited about. So, three justices warn majority is handcuffing President Trump's ability to fight foreign threats, with three members of the Supreme Court dissenting from the majority six-person decision to claim that all the tariffs were illegal. Supreme Court struck down Trump's biggest, boldest effort to secure our borders and rebuild American industry by basically claiming the tariffs are illegal. They claim to have ways of dealing with this and working around this. Of course, the biggest scandal out of this is the awareness of and understanding that Trump's Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, had family who invested heavily in these tariffs, basically making billions of dollars now that they've been struck down. Howard Lutnick is the architect of Trump's tariff plan. He's the one who pushed Trump on these. And the exact same time he was doing this, Lutnick's sons, who he appointed to take over his bank, were betting the tariffs would be struck down and buying up refund rights at 25 cents on the dollar. And now that the government owes corporations refunds, and depending on how many refund slips they're holding, the Lutnick's bank could make billions of dollars. There's nothing else I can say about this that won't catch me a permaban from Mel at Village Crazy Lady. Trump's Commerce Secretary loves tariffs. His former investment bank is taking bets against them. That seems criminal to me. So his family just made billions of dollars because the policy that he pushed to have Trump invoke is going to cost the American taxpayers billions of dollars. Sounds suspicious to me. It sounds like corruption, in fact. Let's go to clip 25 here. This is Secretary Scott Bessent, Treasury Secretary, talking about how the Trump administration is going to deal with the Supreme Court ruling from today. Let's watch.
I would also like to take a moment to address today's Supreme Court ruling, and I would note that I did not change a single word in my speech post the ruling. President Trump will always put our national security and Americans first. And as I have said before, the president has multiple tools in his toolbox. Let's be clear about what today's ruling was and what it wasn't. Despite the misplaced gloating from Democrats, ill-informed media outlets, and the very people who gutted our industrial base, the court did not rule against President Trump's tariffs. Six justices simply ruled that IEEPA authorities cannot be used to raise even $1 of revenue. This administration will invoke alternative legal authorities to replace the IEEPA tariffs. We will be leveraging Section 232 and Section 301 tariff authorities that have been validated through thousands of legal challenges. Treasury's estimates show that the use of Section 122 authority, combined with potentially enhanced Section 232 and Section 301 tariffs, will result in virtually unchanged tariff revenue in 2026.
Okay, so essentially they're saying that the problem was the methodology by which the tariffs were enacted, not the tariffs themselves, so they're going to basically be litigating this for the next couple years. So that's good. That'll be a good use of resources and time and attention for us. Fantastic. As MJ Truth Ultra on X puts it, there is a plan B within Justice Kavanaugh's dissent. He says the Supreme Court got it wrong, but says Trump still has all the cards. The IEEPA law does not let the president impose tariffs during a national emergency, based on its text history and precedent. The majority wrongly applied the strict major questions doctrine to block it in foreign affairs and trade. Even if the ruling stands, presidents can likely impose similar for most of or most of the same tariffs using these other trade laws instead. Trade Expansion Act of 1962, the Trade Act of 1974, or the Tariff Act of 1930. These require a few extra steps, like investigations, but cover the tariffs at issue. Bottom line, legally, he says this was the wrong call, but presidents have major workarounds via those other statutes. However, it's going to be a giant, inexpensive, and time-consuming battle before we ever get to the bottom of anything. And again, from the Gateway Pundit article, talks about the three very strong dissensions. The justices called the decision a dangerous power grab by the judiciary, ignoring historical precedent and the clear intent of Congress to empower the president in times of emergency. President Trump, shortly after reclaiming the White House in 2025, declared a national emergency over the public health crisis caused by illegal drugs pouring out of Canada, Mexico, and China, and the hollowing out of American manufacturing due to massive trade deficits. Using IEEPA, a law passed in 1977, to give presidents tools to fight foreign threats, he slapped tariffs on imports, 25% on most Canadian and Mexican goods, et cetera, et cetera. Roberts, joined by the usual suspects, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, and turncoat Barrett and Gorsuch, invoked the so-called major questions doctrine to block Trump's America First agenda. They argued tariffs are a taxing power reserved for Congress, ignoring that emergencies demand swift action from the commander-in-chief. Justice Samuel Alito didn't write separately, but joined Kavanaugh's dissent in full, signaling his full-throated agreement that the ruling is a dangerous overstep. Which, according to J.D. Vance, he says, you know, that the president is endowed by the Constitution with the right to basically manage foreign trade. And this is just an aspect of foreign trade. It's not a tax per se. If it was a tax, that would be something the Congress would have to do. But if it's about regulating foreign trade, then it would be the president's prerogative. Again, how this goes, it's kind of hard to say, but it's basically where we are. Gorsuch and Roberts strongly suggest in their decision, so Gorsuch and Roberts are the ones who decided that tariffs are illegal and should be removed. They strongly suggest that if Trump had only done what Nixon did, that is temporary tariffs at a consistent capped rate, SCOTUS would not have taken the case. It was his madman routine of making up crazy new tax rates every morning that doomed him. So that's a reading from Maxwell Meyer on X, with these statements saying basically from the decisions from the Supreme Court saying things like, and because laws must earn such broad support to survive the legislative process, they tend to endure, allowing ordinary people to plan their lives in ways that they cannot when the rules shift from day to day. Saying the president asserts the extraordinary power to unilaterally impose tariffs on an unlimited amount, duration, and scope. In light of the breadth, history, and constitutional context of that asserted authority, he must identify clear congressional authorization to exercise it. IEEPA's grant of authority to regulate importation falls short. IEEPA contains no reference to tariffs or duties. The government points to no statute in which Congress uses the word regulate to authorize taxation. And until now, no president has ever read IEEPA to confer such power. We claim no special competence in the matter of economics or foreign affairs. We claim only, as we must, the limited role assigned to us by Article 3 of the Constitution. Fulfilling that role, we hold the IEEPA does not authorize the president to impose tariffs. And they say those tariffs are also of limited amount, duration, and scope. The previous tariffs that were deemed constitutional were of a limited amount, duration, and scope, noting that a 10% surcharge was described by President Nixon as a temporary measure and was in effect for less than 5 months, applied only to articles which had been the subject of prior tariff concessions and was capped at congressionally authorized rates. So again, basically saying that if he had done it in a more strategic way or had even gotten Congress to go along with him, then it wouldn't be an issue. And so then the controversy comes in that it apparently was Howard Lutnick that advised Trump to take this tack and that this would be a tariff strategy that would succeed. And now that that was wrong and that all these tariffs, and specifically the method by which the tariffs were applied, has been rejected, his bank and his family is making potentially billions and billions of dollars off it. Lutnick swindles America again, from DD_geopolitics. The Supreme Court just ruled Trump's tariffs illegal. Guess who's about to make a fortune off this? Cantor Fitzgerald, the firm now run by Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick's sons, has been buying the rights to tariff refunds from the U.S. importers at pennies on the dollar. Here's how the scheme works. U.S. companies paid billions in tariffs that are now ruled illegal. Cantor approaches those companies and says, I'll give you $0.25 now for every dollar you're owed in refunds. Companies take the quick cash rather than wait years for the legal process. When the refunds come through, Cantor collects the full dollar. Lutnick, quote-unquote, divested from Cantor by handing it to his 20-something sons and placing his equity in a trust for those same sons. He paid zero capital gains tax on the transfer. As Commerce Secretary, Lutnick has direct visibility into the government's legal strategy, how their lawyers rate their odds, and what agreements they'll make, his family's firm betting against the very tariffs his boss created. His family firm was and is betting against the very tariffs his boss created. They bought a 25 cents. They bought a 25 cents on the dollar, and after today's SCOTUS ruling, those rights could well be worth 80 to 90 cents. The potential payout could be in the billions. Insider trading with a couple extra steps. Hard to argue otherwise. Because you understand they would have lost a ton of money if the tariffs had been proven to be valid. So a business gets a tariff. They lose money from the tariff. Cantor goes to them and says, you know, you lost $1 million. We'll give you $250,000 and you'll give up the rights to whatever potential windfall would come if these are reversed and they have to return the money to you. And so by paying 25 cents, they're now essentially getting 80 to 90 cents back from that, meaning that they are basically tripling their investment. And yet if the tariff decision had gone the other way, they would have lost out on all of that money they'd invested. It all would have been nothing because there would be no money to get back. So all of those 25 cent on the dollar transactions would have been just pure losses for Lutnick. I'm sorry, for the business that Lutnick temporarily handed to his nepotistic sons. Great. Top of family of top Trump officials stands to make fortune from tariffs ruling. Quote, pure criminality. So, what a lucky and clever guy this Howard Lutnick is, huh? He advises Trump on something. Trump sort of stakes his entire operation off this strategy. Turns out not to work. Bad news for Trump. Extremely good news for Howard Lutnick, his family, and his business partners. Isn't that amazing? Let's go to clip 32 here. This was a statement made by Trump following the announcement of the tariffs, saying that he is going to continue to tariff people, but just on a blanket worldwide tariff rather than an individual basis. Let's go to clip 32.
Which have also been confirmed and are fully allowed. Therefore, effective immediately, all national security tariffs under Section 232 and existing Section 301 tariffs, they're existing, they're there, remain in place, fully in place, and in full force and effect. Today, I will sign an order to impose a 10% global tariff under Section 122 over and above our normal tariffs already being charged. And we're also initiating several Section 301 and other investigations to protect our country from unfair trading practices of other countries and companies.
Okay, so 10% blanket tariffs on everybody in the world. He also made some other statements during this press conference about the looming conflict with Iran. We continue to pile military equipment into the Middle East for this promised boondoggle. Let's go to clip 34 here. Trump gives his reasoning for why he's going to war with all these places. Let's watch.
Can't charge a dollar. I would have used one penny, but we don't make the pennies anymore. We save money. Can't charge $1 to any country under IEPA. Not $1. I assume to protect other countries. This must have been done to protect those other countries, certainly not the United States of America, which they should be interested in protecting. That's what they're supposed to be protecting. But I am allowed to cut off any and all trade or business with that same country. In other words, I can destroy the trade. I can destroy the country. I'm even allowed to impose a foreign country-destroying embargo. I can embargo. I can do anything I want, but I can't charge $1. Because that's not what it says. And that's not the way it even reads. I can do anything I want to do to them, but I can't charge any money. So I'm allowed to destroy the country, but I can't charge them a little fee. I could give them a little two-cent fee, but I cannot charge under any circumstances. I cannot charge them anything.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. They're saying that the president of the United States has the ability to put sanctions and embargoes on countries, totally destroy them economically, but he can't charge them a percentage. Yeah, that's a little inconsistent, actually. That doesn't make any sense. But then again, what does these days? A spokesperson for Cantor Fitzgerald said they never executed any transactions or taken the risk on the legality of tariffs. The firm claimed a salesman mistakenly believed the product would be approved and began pitching it prematurely, but that management ultimately decided against the business due to political sensitivities. So they're saying that's not true. Well, I don't know. It's been reported by a bunch of mainstream media. I know they're not exactly the most honest brokers in the world, but that would be a pretty hefty defamation case if they got that wrong. But hey, could be so. Let's talk about Iran. Let's talk about the war with Iran. Let's talk about stupidity and the just ill-advised nature of our entire relationship with the state of Israel. You know, Tucker Carlson and interviewed Mike Huckabee and basically humiliated and destroyed his every talking point. It was really not didn't go well for the our Zionist ambassador. And I'll go to a clip or two of that here in just a second. But I want to first go to clip number 9. This is Greg Stoker, who's running for Congress here in Texas in the 31st District. Here's him laying out brilliantly the reality about our interaction with the state of Iran. Let's watch.
U.S. military preparations for another distance conflict against Iran will be complete by the weekend as the most hardware has been deployed to the Persian Gulf since 2002. The green light still hasn't been given by the White House, but when talking about this from the imperial perspective, please stop calling this a regime change operation. This is not a regime change operation. Then that hasn't been the plan for years. The play is ethnic balkanization, and you can thank the neocons at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies and their colleagues in Tel Aviv for this policy. There is no Persian government in exile drafting a constitution ready to take over while a revolutionary vanguard-esque element seizes the institutions for an orderly transition of power. That would never be allowed to happen, as the U.S. and Israel have no interest in establishing a new government that would potentially be sucked into Russian or Chinese spheres of influence. And that means deep destabilization and balkanization into easily controllable resource fiefdoms along ethnic and territorial lines. So military strikes to weaken out the state alongside economic warfare and support for sectarianism. From the imperial perspective, if we could have regime changed Iran decades ago, we would have, when the economic and military might of the empire wasn't in such decline. Now the only play is a failed state, with security guarantees for Sunni, Azeri, Kurdish, and Balochi minorities willing to break away, and for the uncreated state of what Washington warhawks call South Azerbaijan. The idea that stirring separatist sentiment in concert with U.S. military action will fracture Iran is a bloody fantasy, and one that deliberately overlooks how schemes hatched, in large part by pro-Israel neocons, have backfired in Iraq and Syria, leaving chaos in their wake. And this impending war will literally destabilize the globe. Turkey will never brook U.S. support for Kurdish separatism in Iran. Similarly, Pakistan, already facing its own Baloch insurgency, will see Western meddling as a direct threat to its territorial integrity. Russia and China will be proven right and will speed along their multipolar coalition building. India will similarly reject this policy. It would devastatingly undermine New Delhi's trade and logistic projects in the region, and on and on and on. A destabilized Iran would lead to untold deaths and a migration crisis that would dwarf 2015 Syria. It would be fertile recruiting grounds for ISIS Khorasan, which would be a great excuse to heighten more direct U.S. security involvement. Contract actors in the failed state, and will cause energy shocks across the globe, and Europe will face a self-inflicted disaster, and a lot of U.S. troops will die in the opening days of this whole operation. Declining empires are always brazen and vindictive, lashing out in all directions, taking insane risks, acting without a coherent plan, wreaking havoc everywhere, as the material conditions of their own citizens are completely immiserated. For the sake of humanity, the U.S. empire must be dismantled root and branch. Again, they're not going for regime change, as that is not possible. They're going for balkanization.
So I think he's fairly on the money about that. He sounds like a socialist to me. But this is the problem, is that the way that Trump is acting is feeding the fire of their arguments. It's giving all the credence to their, you know, claims about America being this evil empire. In actuality, that's how we're acting. So we can stop acting like that, and then they won't have anything to complain about, but we insist on proving them right. So I don't know what else to say. I do think the American empire as it exists now does need to be destroyed root and branch, because I love America and I want America to flourish, and I'm sick of our interests being completely tossed to the side in favor of these ridiculous overseas adventures. And remember, this is where it ties all back in together from the beginning of the show, of the fact that 911 won't respond to calls of women who are being attacked by their boyfriends. We can't get our elementary school kids in classrooms that actually teach them anything. Our economy is absolutely collapsing, and what little is propped up, the vast majority of the American people are being deliberately excluded from taking those jobs. So, yeah, screw this whole system. Like, what the hell are we doing? The material conditions of the average American are worse than they were 20 years ago. Everything is degrading rapidly, and we're spending infinite time and resources and effort and energy and potentially lives so that Israel can kill people with impunity. And remember, that's what it's all about. The AP just came out with an article, a look at the U.S. military assets in the Middle East, just describing the enormous buildup of military equipment there. However, it's this line down at the bottom that's gotten a lot of attention and should really be in the forefront of the military planners. In the segment called Expectations of Retaliation, they say many likely expect Iran to, quote, just keep firing drones and cruise missiles back at Israel and American bases in regard to almost everything we might do. He said Iran could go bigger and broader, especially if its leadership feels targeted. Vaez, an Iranian expert for the International Crisis Group, said Iran is unlikely to limit its response, as it did after the U.S. struck its nuclear facilities in June. Iran had signaled that when and how it would retaliate, so that there was very little damage done. They have now come to the conclusion that the only way that they can stop this cycle is to draw blood and to inflict significant harm on the U.S. and Israel, even if that comes at a very high price for themselves. Yeah, that's the logical conclusion to come to. And again, there's no point for them to negotiate. Every time they do, America stabs them in the back, bombs their negotiators, or lets Israel bomb their negotiators and screws them over. Remember, we were negotiating last time. We bombed them in the middle of negotiations. So everything we've done has disincentivized Iran from cooperating or mitigating their aggressiveness. No. They're incentivized entirely to throw everything they can at us. And I'm frankly surprised that they're waiting so long. If I was Iran, I might not have been so patient. I want to go quickly to a last video before we finish the hour. Clip 27. This is a new revelation about Israel's genocide. Let's watch.
The death toll in Gaza is 50% higher than originally reported, according to a new study. The Lancet Medical Journal said that 75,000 people were killed in the first 16 months of the conflict. That figure is 25,000 more than the death toll originally reported by the Gaza Health Ministry. Israel has consistently disputed the figure, but last month a senior security officer made a U-turn and said that the original data reported was close to accurate.
Today and tomorrow, the last days to get 100 times X entries into the amazing raffle. It only happens every few months, where both of the offerings of the Shelby Mustang and the awesome Ford off-road truck, 100X for every dollar you spend on the store, put into the raffle. You get put in for just the next 2 days, is all that's left, to get both vehicles. There's a time where there's a crossover for 1 week. That ends tomorrow. Every order in the site for a very limited time, it's probably just last throughout the weekend, I'm told, is this hat. And this is a classic design that I put out on InfoWars like 20 years ago. I noticed everybody else copied it, which is cool. I just go, why don't we have that classic design back? So they brought it back, and it's a ring of, 13 stars around 1776. And it's simple, it's clean, and a leftist probably won't kill you or murder you for it. You know, if you have like a MAGA or InfoWars hat, that's a real adventure. This is just at the airport or wherever, hey, patriots know. And it's just exciting, spreads the word. So every order, on top of the sales that are already there, for a limited time, gets a free 1776 ball cap at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the store, Become a VIP for $30 a month. You can cancel any time for free. Instantly, you get $40 to spend each month. The minute you click that button for $30, you get $40 to spend. Special deals, special offers, special sales, top everything. So anybody buying anything should be a VIP. And it's really no commitment. You just get better deals. Cancel any time for free. One click in your profile. Everyone should be a VIP. Also, sometimes stuff runs out and sells out. Don't want that to happen? Become a subscriber. Cancel any time. They hold it back for you at the biggest discounts as well. Become a VIP. Become a subscriber. But regardless, share the live feeds of the show. Tell folks about those local AM and FM stations, cable stations, because that's how we reach new people, and that's how we change the world. The whole globalist house of cards is coming down. We've been vindicated. You've been vindicated. Nothing's going to stop that. Stay with us. Massive guest straight ahead.
In the entirety of the world, there are about 16 million Jews total, and 8 million of them live here. The rest live mostly in New York or South Florida and a few other places.
Okay.
So this is a small population of people. They have connection to this land historically, biblically.
Do they?
Yes, they do.
If Bibi's family, we know they lived in Eastern Europe. There's no evidence they ever lived here. He's not religious.
But
in
ancestrally,
what sense
but ancestrally,
how do we know that? Do you have his family tree? No, we don't.
Do you?
He doesn't. So well, no one does. That's the point. So how do we know that he has any connection to this
Jewish,
land at all?
And if there has been a practice of Judaism and a connection to the language,
but
the Bible, the land.
His ancestors didn't. He doesn't practice Judaism in any rigorous way. His ancestors didn't live here. They didn't speak the language. And there's no evidence they ever lived here. So on what basis does he have a right
very
to be
much
here?
Speaks the language. He has fought for the land. His family has fought
for
the land.
Dodging a obvious question, which is where does this right come from? And the reason it's meaningful is because there are a lot of people in the territory that Israel controls today, particularly in the West Bank, who through genetic testing, we can know their families have been here for thousands of years. We don't know whether they practiced Judaism, whether they were Samaritans, pre-Islam. We don't know that. A lot of them we know have been Christians for 2,000 years. They have less of a right to the land than someone whose ancestors, the only thing we know about them is they lived in Latvia or Poland. They're Eastern European. How does that work?
They're Jewish.
By what definition?
They're Jewish by their
But how do we know they have
ethnicity?
Any connection
they're
to
Jewish
the Jews
by their
of the,
faith. They're
the
Jewish
Bible.
By the connection to the language. Jewish by the connection to the Torah.
But how do we know that Bibi, specifically Bibi's ancestors ever lived here? How do we know that?
I'm not sure if I understand your question.
How do we know if the Prime Minister of Israel's ancestors ever lived?
Maybe I could ask you, how do we know they didn't? I mean,
well, it's on the basis of the claim that they did that all kinds of things happen. People are displaced. There's a money flow. I mean, it's a big question. A lot hangs on this. Mm-hmm. It's not some theoretical thing like, ooh, you know, did my grandparents do this or do that? It's like, no, we have a right to be here because my ancestors were here. Okay, how do we know they were here?
I'm just totally unable to process what you're trying to get at.
You've spent a lot of time thinking about the right of the Jewish people to their homeland. Do the Irish have the same right to a homeland?
As long as they can defend it, and as long as they,
As long as they can defend it.
But Tucker, here's the point.
Wait, hold on. Now you just flip category. You're the minister here.
Yeah, and I'm telling
you. As long as they can defend it. And if they can't defend it,
they're not allowing me to tell you that I think that what is very, very special here is that there is a biblical, as well as an ethnic, and a historical. So you can take any one, but if you add them all together, biblical, historical, and ethnic, you have a very strong case. That the Jewish people are living in a land that is indigenous to them, that has been their historic homeland for 3,800 years.
You can repeat it as
well. And you can also look in the archaeology. The stones cry out.
Okay.
Have you been to the city of David, for example?
I have.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So you know then that.
And I love it.
It's an amazing place. It may be the greatest archaeological discovery in all of history.
It's
because
pretty great.
It's stunning. And they still continue to find things that date the Jewish people to this land archaeologically for 3,800 years.
We can date the British people to their land much longer, much thousands of years longer. Stonehenge is 3,000 years older than any building built by the descendants of Abram in this country. And so I just, it's fine. I'm not trying to invalidate anyone's right. I'm just wanting you to affirm that right, but it makes you uncomfortable and you won't. And I don't know why.
Because I've never honestly sat down and asked myself, are the lines around the
It's an
United
island, so
Kingdom,
we know what the lines are.
I'm saying, but are those lines, are those rooted in something other than the historical connection? Well, great. Then they should have it. But that's
they have a
question.
Right to have it. But then you said if they can defend it, and if they can't defend it, they lose the right.
But I didn't say it was exclusive one or the other. I think you're really going off the trail.
I just want to know if these principles apply universally or if they only apply to the people of Israel.
My answer appears
to be just the people of Israel. They're the only ones with these rights, and I just reject that.
I'm not an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and an analyst and a futurist and a father and a guy who loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer. It shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping in my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night. To quote Waylon Jennings.
Alex Jones lights the fuse, and Harrison Smith keeps it roaring. This is the War Room.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Third hour is on. I want to tell you that it is the last day to get 100 times entries and a chance to win two vehicles and $20,000. So every single cent that you spend at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, if you want to let them know who sent you, gets you entered to win the Ford F-250 diesel or the Ford Mustang Shelby GT500 in every single order. At thealexjonesstore.com comes with a free hat, the very cool 1776 black trucker hat. No minimum spend. Just go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Every order placed funds the operation and keeps us on the air. We cannot thank you enough for your support. We literally cannot do it without you. We don't just say that. We don't have anybody else. We got no corporations. We got no billionaires. We got no government support. We have the audience. And, if you don't support us, we'll go away forever. If you do support us, we will be here forever and continue to fight forever and ever. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. And, with that, I'm happy to welcome my guest, Tiffany Cianci, in studio. You, of course, know her well as the, bubbly little fairy of doom, Tiffany Cianci, at The Vino Mom on X. And you can go to TiffanyCianci.com. She's an activist raising awareness about the critical threat of private equity and a number of other horrible things going on. You also are a very prominent activist in the MAHA movement. Again, you can follow Tiffany at The Vino Mom on X or TiffanyCianci.com. How you doing, Tiffany?
I'm doing great.
Good.
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be back.
Well, we got a lot to discuss. Let's get right into it because I know you were saying you're like, we only have an hour. How are we going to get to all of this?
So we got
to triage it, right? What is the most important thing to talk about right now?
There's a lot of really important things. We could spend 4 hours on Epstein. We could spend 3 hours on talking about aliens to try and distract us from Epstein.
Yeah, we're not
going
to do that. We're not talking about aliens.
They want us to.
Desperately want to have us distracted.
What I want to talk about today, there's a few things. One, obviously, I'm sure you've already covered it, but the tariffs were just struck down by the Supreme Court.
Yep.
And there's something else going on at the Supreme Court today as we speak, and that is that at the behest of President Trump, who sent his Solicitor General there, he asked the Supreme Court to grant pesticide immunity to pesticide companies.
Yes.
And what they're trying to say, the argument before the court, is that Bayer Monsanto says, if the EPA said at some point in the past, we are safe, There is no American that should legally be allowed to question whether or not that is true. Because the government wouldn't do that, kids.
But it's not about questioning, right? It's about holding them legally accountable for the damage that they definitely do.
And it's also about the fact that they're suggesting that, that if science changes or if they're withholding information from the public, that we should not be able to use the legal remedies that our three branches of government laid out for this purpose. I mean, to suggest that this has never happened, let's just talk about tobacco.
Right.
Okay. There was a time when the American Medical Association was recommending smoking cigarettes to decrease stress in pregnancy. And there was a time where they said it was really good for your breathing and it was great for dealing with speech impediments. And the tobacco companies were lying to the government and hiding science they had in their possession that proved it was dangerous.
Yep.
And under this exact argument, that would mean that those tobacco lawsuits that funded millions of kids going to college because their parents had died of lung cancer throughout all of the 90s should not have been allowed to take place.
Right.
That we should not have been able to say they know it's not safe and they're hiding it from the government. And right now, I think we have a real contradiction happening in the government because simultaneously, while this is happening, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is moving to remove the law that says companies can say their own products are safe in the HHS side. They're trying to remove. So like right now, we have like, you know, at any given time, like 15,000 ingredients in our food.
Right.
And there's been a backdoor loophole where companies can self decide if their ingredients are safe and they can just tell the government, we checked, it's fine. It's safe. That he's actively moving to remove that simultaneously while the Trump administration is asking the Supreme Court to say, if the government says it's safe, it is safe and you're not allowed to question that.
So wait, help me understand this. So right now, if a company does something that's unsafe, they'll get sued for it. And
Yes. That's
the remedy. And that incentivizes them to be extra careful and not to do things that are unsafe or produce products that will harm people. So they want to remove the ability to sue the pesticide companies for the damage that they do while also making it so what is the RFK? So we can't – I don't understand. I guess I just don't understand. Run that by me again.
Doing conflicting things right now, right?
Okay.
So we have the EPA that is right now authorizing tons – of new pesticides, forever chemical pesticides. They reinstated dicamba.
Yeah.
These are known things that are illegal or deemed unsafe in other countries.
Right.
And they are actively trying to say now that glyphosate should be protected. We have people in Congress that are being paid to force through pesticide immunity, which you and I have talked about a lot. Okay. And then three times now over this just this legislative cycle, they have tried to sneak federal immunity for pesticides into different maneuvers in court.
Right.
And in the legislature.
Right.
Okay. In the legislature, they attached it to an appropriations bill recently.
Okay.
We defeated it. In Florida, it was attempted to put it in that you would be criminally held liable for defamation if you challenged a pesticide through your First Amendment rights. We defeated it. Okay. Now, just this week, the farm bill was released. And guess what's back in there? Pesticide immunity.
Yep.
On the same day, by the way, that Bayer Monsanto offered $7.2 billion to settle claims that they've given, you know, thousands of farmers lymphoma.
That's what I thought you were going to bring up when you said, you know, ironically that this happens on the same day. Bayer agrees to $7.5 billion proposed settlement over thousands of Roundup cancer lawsuits from February 19th. So on literally the same day. That they settle for $7.25 billion, they never want to experience that again. They're like, this sucked. We had to pay $7.52 billion.
But this is like their 30th lawsuit like this.
Yeah.
They've paid out tens of billions of dollars at this point. And I would like to point out lead counsel on several of the most record-breaking verdicts ever in history was Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Right.
Against them. And right now, so what happened was when we defeated the first three attempts this legislative cycle, Trump sent his solicitor general to say, well, if we can't get it through in the legislature, we're going to get it through in the judiciary and ask the Supreme Court to take up this case that says that no American can ever question anything the government has ever said is safe again. Because if the government says it's safe, you're not allowed to question that because the government's never gotten anything wrong on science or, You know,
would this end up with a situation like the vaccine payout fund, where like instead of the pesticide companies being sued, they'll sue the U.S. government and it'll be taxpayers that pay out the
actually, if
damage?
I'm being honest, I think if this verdict came in their favor, that would be used to eliminate the vaccine payout fund. Because if the government says it's safe, you can't challenge it. And right now that fund is paying out what's challenged. Right. I actually think that would create precedence. Now I want to tell you what happened day before yesterday.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Because when I say they are moving every single day with a new maneuver to try to force through pesticide immunity. And I want to stress in the first MAHA commission statement, it was that glyphosate is likely one of the leading contributors in the United States to the chronic disease epidemic.
Right.
That was Kennedy's assertion from the first commission report. This 1 year forward right now. In addition to immunity in the pesticide bill, trying to get immunity in Florida, forcing through immunity in the Dakotas, getting immunity in the Carolinas, right? Forcing it through in the appropriations bill. Yesterday, Trump issued a new executive order while we were busy talking about aliens and Epstein. And that executive order calls, he assigned it under the 1950s Defense Production Act. It says during a time of war, you can force companies to start making other products that the company need or the country needs
right.
to survive a time of war. And he said that glyphosate under the Wartime Powers Production Act grants the authority to the commissioner to force companies to start making more glyphosate in America because it is essential to the food security of the nation. And in that act, in that executive order, there is an entire paragraph about immunity that was released just in time for Bayer Monsanto to talk about it at the Supreme Court today. 1 day before the arguments. But don't worry, they were ready and they knew what was coming. Not at all because they have a backdoor channel to the entire administration.
Now, the devil's advocate argument for this, and I'm sure you saw the video of RFK Jr. also sort of talking about the justification for this being that our system is so messed up at this point. We're so unnecessarily, but at this point necessarily reliant on glyphosate that it does actually create a vulnerability that China could exploit should they choose to. But then I've heard other people, you know, Mike Adams, health ranger basically said, no, this is completely untrue. Glyphosate is used to dry out the crops. It's not even about being a pesticide right now. How do you take the justification for this being, well, you know, if China wants to cut it off, we wouldn't be able to grow food.
I would like to point out that China is only one place we get glyphosate from, and it comes from lots of different countries, including a bunch that comes from Europe. I feel like this was very well timed to coincide with the Supreme Court case, and that at some point enough money has been handed to the politicians in this administration to ensure that they were going to get this done. And I'm going to be frank. I don't think that the statement by Kennedy, first of all, it felt like a betrayal. As somebody who's a huge fan and knows Robert F. Kennedy Jr. personally. MAHA moms, there have been dozens of articles released in the last day about the betrayal they feel in this moment. He doesn't have any control over this. He's the HHS secretary. This is the EPA.
Right.
Okay? This is the FDA. This isn't him. He can't control it. But watching him issue that statement felt like he was being made to bend the knee. And I don't think his statement was for you or me. I think it was sending the message that one way or another, they're going to get this done for this companies. And it feels sickening.
Yeah.
Because we do know that in the countries where they don't have these pesticides, they are healthier than us.
Right.
We also know that farmers, by multitudes of hundreds of percents, have the highest instances of lymphoma and leukemia of any profession in the United States. Please tell me, do you think it's all that fresh air that's giving them lymphoma? Is it all that fresh food? Is it all that time outside with vitamin D and sunshine? Or is it quite possibly that they encounter pesticides more than any other profession?
Yeah.
Which is more likely?
No, of course. And the decisions prove it out. I mean, why is Bayer paying $7.25 billion over Roundup if it doesn't cause cancer? There really is no justification for this. It feels like a betrayal, and I don't know what else it could possibly be. And it really does feel like every step forward with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and HHS, we take a big old leap backwards with Lee Zeldin at the EPA.
Lee Zeldin, Brooke Rollins, we have Kyle, we have a bunch of lobbyists for chemical companies running the agencies that control chemicals. These are people that helped get PR to turn people away from recognizing the harm that these pesticides cause for decades. And now they run these agencies. And when you see that, it feels like more than a betrayal. It is so exhausting for all of us to recognize that if 99% of the American population support a piece of legislation, there is a less than 20% chance it will pass. But when a billionaire wants something done, they will find a way. How has Congress, who does literally nothing for the American people at this point, how have they found the time to find 3 to 4 to 5 different ways to force this into bills in one legislative session when they can't pass a single DOGE initiative? Like, where do they find the time? Somehow they find the money.
Yeah. And, you know, I always, and I'm only half joking, I'm like, we need something that's like attempted tyranny, because yeah, we're in such a disadvantage where they get to keep pushing. They try to put in one bill, doesn't work. They try the next one. Eventually it's going to get through. It's going to slip in a spending bill that has to pass, or it's going to go through this way or that way. At a certain point, we have to actually be proactive and step out and have congressmen write a law saying, no, you absolutely have to be able to be sued to be a pesticide.
Wait. That's already happened. Remember, so Cory Booker right now in this legislative session has a bill called the Pesticide Injury Accountability Act. And it codifies into law, which would undermine the Supreme Court's decision. It would moot the need for the case. Codifies into law the right of every single American to seek legal remedy where they have been physically harmed by pesticides. And all we need is one or two brave legislators and some co-sponsorship. It exists. It's already written. It's ready.
Okay, so that is a good call to action. Tell me the name of the bill again. And everybody listening to my voice, you all have a congressman, you all have a senator. Call them about this topic in particular. I guarantee they're not getting a lot of calls about this. They need to be. They all need to be hearing about this. Is this the right one here?
This is the right one. It is the PIAA, the Pesticide Injury Accountability Act of 2025. It is authored by Senator Cory Booker. And let me tell you, there is broad support for this Cory Booker-backed bill among Republican creators, Republican advocates, Republican on both sides of the aisle. We all want this.
Yeah.
We all want this. So the bill is here. We need co-sponsorship, and we need to force it to a vote on the floor. We need every politician to say whether MAHA actually means something to them or it doesn't. We can force that right now.
Absolutely. And don't let the Democrats take the point on this. Like, why can we never do anything positive for the American people? It's so infuriating. And this is something that, like, I don't like Cory Booker. I wouldn't trust him, you know, at all about anything. But he's right about this, and we need to be teamed up on this. The American people need to be opposing the corrupt corporate interests that are forcing us down our throats. So here's a fact sheet from the WhiteHouse.gov. President Donald J. Trump ensures an adequate supply of elemental phosphorus and glyphosate-based herbicides for national security. So this is the executive order that does what they couldn't do legislatively. But this is the pesticide immunity in the farm bill. The federal farm bill was released yesterday, and this was from Valentine's Day. So last week it was released, and it does contain a provision designed to give pesticide manufacturers de facto immunity, Section 1025. As always, the lawyers behind these provisions have drafted the language in a manner which obfuscates its true meaning and impact. Legislators are being told it's a provision for uniform labeling for pesticides, but pesticides already have uniform labels. So then what is the true intention of the provision? It is de facto immunity. So is this the one that was extricated? Was this one of the ones that got defeated?
No.
Or this one's still in there?
So this, we defeated the one in the appropriations bill just a month ago when I was on your show by video.
Yeah.
We defeated that one. And literally, 3 weeks later, here's another one.
Oh, my God.
This is the fourth one of this term. The fourth one in the federal realm. It's coming in the Senate. It's coming in the House. They are forcing this through. And I want to stress, can you imagine any circumstance where a monopoly that is unchecked and has control over our food supply system, controls all of the seeds in our supply system, and I dare I say, the single biggest moneymaker for Bayer Monsanto after glyphosate, what is it? Roundup-resistant seeds.
Mm-hmm.
If we have no Roundup, they have no need for their patented seeds, and we can get back to actual food security. They right now sue farmers every day all across America because seeds blow onto their property, and they will go and they will steal samples of wheat and corn from farmer properties all across America that have blown from their neighbors that use Roundup Ready corn or Roundup Ready wheat. And they will sue those farmers. And guess what? The settlement always involves forcing those farmers to start using their seeds.
Yep.
They have a monopoly on our seed supply. Okay. And for those of you that are interested in how you can defeat this, there's a really great creator named My Health Forward. His name is Matthew. He has created a list of all the farms across the United States that still use regenerative practices where you can go buy food. And he sells non-GMO seeds on his website.
So this is exactly what we always talk about. InfoWars, we always take a two-pronged approach here.
Yes.
You have to be defending yourself and your family against this attack, but also you have to be attacking it politically because that's how they're trying to implement this stuff. And yeah, it's like, it's just like, how much more could you need? Like, what would even be the positive argument for this? It's just, it's got to be just pure greed, or they deliberately want the unhealthiness.
Oh, they've said the quiet part out loud. Bayer has been sued by hundreds of thousands of people that have gotten cancer from their products. Okay, they have spent tens of billions of dollars. And they said it. They said, if we do not receive this immunity, we may no longer be able to sell glyphosate in America because it's too cost ineffective to do so. Oh, no.
Yeah, okay, cool.
You don't say. You don't say.
Oh, heaven forbid.
If cost of business is no longer killing people because you have immunity, then you might have to sell a product that doesn't, in fact, kill people. And I would like to point out our farmers are dying in record numbers.
Yeah.
And the next generations can't keep up with the farms because of all of the monopolies. We have four companies that control all of farming in America right now. And they're all owned internationally, right? We, all the meat supply is entirely, oh, which by the way, a whole nother frustration. Our meat supply is entirely controlled through industry and industrial farming by international monopolies that we've given access to our country and not held to antitrust standards. And simultaneously, Trump issues another executive order to quadruple the amount of money we're, or meat we're importing from Argentina after we gave them a $40 billion bailout. Why? Why are we doing this? Do we not care about America? If you're issuing an executive order saying we need to shore up America's food supply in case there's a war, why are we not shoring up the safeguards for American farmers to be able to operate outside of monopoly practices?
Yeah.
Why can't we do what's good for America instead of what's good for billionaires?
And of course, Tyson Foods, like all of these are some of the biggest employers of illegal immigrants. And Tyson Foods is one of the main funders of the Tide Foundation, which, you know, undercuts American wages. So, yeah, we are literally subsidizing our own destruction at every pass.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And we're also seeing in real time the inability of farmers to do the work that they want to do, which is to regionally operate and provide food for their communities.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because they'd much rather us not be able to harvest anything from the natural bounty of the earth. So we all have to get cloned pigs from some warehouse in China so they can control our food supply, because things just growing out of the ground and us not relying on anybody in between us and our food source, that makes us very hard to control.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And it's all about control. And, you know, this is one of these examples of things that's just like, what would possibly be the purpose of this? And it almost seems like it's a direct response to some of the stuff RFK Jr.'s done. So one of his major victories, which we cannot thank him enough for, and as much as we're upset at a lot of stuff going on, we will always highlight the victories and the in the successes. He got mercury out of vaccines. Mercury is not necessary. It's, they put it in because it's necessary to stabilize the vaccine if you're shipping it 10,000 miles to the Congo where there's no refrigeration. Totally unnecessary for Americans to ever get mercury in their vaccines. And I'd argue it's not even – regardless, he got mercury out of the vaccines. And then yesterday, EPA weakens limit on mercury from coal plants. The EPA on Friday weakened pollution limits for coal – burning power plants, allowing them to release more heavy metals, including mercury, a powerful neurotoxin linked to brain damage. Again, why? Well, I guess it helps the coal industry, but at the cost of our
health? Who in the coal industry? It doesn't help the coal miners.
Right.
We're helping, again, these billionaires to not have to keep up with regulations that protect their employees, which are the Americans we should be protecting.
100%. And of course, this reminds us of a story that we've covered over and over for the last several years. Mercury poisoning makes birds act homosexual, from National Geographic in 2010. Yeah, that's right. The mercury in the air is making the birds gay, folks. And again, this is an actual article from 2010 on National Geographic. But of course, what it does is lower your testosterone, and it creates imbalances, chemical imbalances in your brain, which leads to a lack of testosterone, which has a number of different effects, which can lead to homosexuality or hermaphroditism, but can also simply cut you off from your gut instinct, right? You're more likely to go with your gut if you have higher testosterone. They cut you off from your testosterone. They're cutting you off from direct communication with the world.
Today and tomorrow, the last days to get 100 times X entries into the amazing raffle. It only happens every few months where both of the offerings of the Shelby Mustang and the awesome Ford off-road truck, 100X for every dollar you spend on the store, put into the raffle. You get put in for just the next 2 days, is all that's left, to get both vehicles. There's a time where there's a crossover for 1 week. That ends tomorrow. Every order in the site for a very limited time, it's probably just last throughout the weekend, I'm told, is this hat. And this is a classic design that I put out on InfoWars like 20 years ago. I noticed everybody else copied it, which is cool. I just go, why don't we have that classic design back? So they brought it back, and it's a ring of, what, 13 stars around 1776. And it's simple, it's clean, and a leftist probably won't kill you or murder you for it. You know, if you have like a MAGA or InfoWars hat, that's a real adventure. This is just at the airport or wherever, hey, patriots know. And it's just exciting, spreads the word. So every order, on top of the sales that are already there, for a limited time, gets a free 1776 ball cap at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the store, become a VIP for $30 a month. You can cancel any time for free. Instantly, you get $40 to spend each month. The minute you click that button for $30, you get $40 to spend. Special deals, special offers, special sales, top everything. So anybody buying anything should be a VIP. And it's really no commitment. You just get better deals. Cancel any time for free. One click in your profile. Everyone should be a VIP. Also, sometimes stuff runs out and sells out. Don't want to happen? Become a subscriber. Cancel any time. They hold it back for you at the biggest discounts as well. Become a VIP. Become a subscriber. But regardless, share the live feeds of the show. Tell folks about those local AM and FM stations, cable stations, because that's how we reach the people, and that's how we change the world. The whole globalist house of cards is coming down. We've been vindicated. You've been vindicated. Nothing's going to stop that. Stay with us. Massive guest straight ahead. We sell the best supplements, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, and knives at thealexjonesstore.com. And they had some awesome daggers and awesome trench knives. That's all great. But I said, I want a wide selection of high quality folding knives, flip knives, you name it. So people have a one-stop shop. They got in a few thousand knives a few months ago. They sold out very quickly. Four or five great designs. They got a bigger shipment in just the last 2 days. Our sponsor, just really top flight knives. These knives, this knife right here you see in the green, highest quality Damascus steel, all of it. These sell in stores for $75 all day. We're selling for $40, $47 bucks. Okay? So look at that flip. Flips right out. Got a nice little, you know, my signature on it, real small, nice little memento for the broadcast. That is a really nice knife. It clips on your belt buckles. We have it in the green. We have it in the murdered out black. We have it also in silver without it being blacked out. Those are great knives. Those are the new designs. Now, those 200 left of the Skull Crusher World War II trench knife with the Spartan tip of the spear. So they held those back. Those are available. A little bit left they held back in their overstock of the Fire with Its Beauty. But this is a really cool knife. Alex Jones Phantom Folding Knife. Limited stock of that came back in. Also, the Alex Jones Burnt Orange Folding Knife. And this is the knife that sold out the quickest of any knife. They got 500 of these. 1,000 now just came in. The first one sold out like in hours. Alex Jones Ring Blade. Yes, those are popular. This is something I didn't really call for, but it's awesome. Got that ring on the back. Got the deal. It's really nice. Those are all back in stock right now at thealexjonesstore.com. But while you're at it, get methylene blue, Irish sea moss, and more, and check out the Patriot Apparel, thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Gentlemen, I'm just sending out a tweet to let everybody know we are live with Tiffany Cianci, who you can follow on X at The Vino Mom, right? It's The Vino Mom. Problem is I got two keyboards and piling all my papers on the other one. We're doing it live, folks. This is what you get, the raw reality. Tiffany Cianci is my guest. You can follow her on X at The Vino Mom at TiffanyCianci.com as well. Did I spell it wrong? Look at that. All right. I'm going to figure that you take over. I'm going to figure this out now.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the War Room. I'm Tiffany Cianci and my guest is Harris.
Yeah, go. You got it. Okay, so we just got a tranche of documents here.
Yes.
Walk us through this, because I think I remember you talking about this last time you were on, maybe. This had just happened, because this happened early January. The SEC wants to the SEC wants to redefine the size of small financial advice firms.
So this is really, to start here, what we have to do is say that President Trump made an announcement last month on, I think it was January 7th, that is something I have been advocating for and fighting for years. And that is to remove institutional investors from single family home ownership.
Right.
This is one of his moves he said he was taking to probably try and help tip the scales back in his favor for the midterms.
Right.
But I'll take it. I will absolutely take a pity executive order at this point. Anything for the American people, if that's what it takes. He made an announcement that he was going to get investors out of single family home ownership. Now, I was ecstatic. I was ecstatic because I've been advocating for this. This is a huge contributor to, and we have had serious viral clips about this, to the housing crisis in America. Right now, there are regions of this country where investors are buying 40% of all of the available inventory.
Yep.
And then they are holding it. They're selling it to one another. They're artificially inflating values and driving up taxes for everybody else. They are making it impossible for everyday Americans to own homes. And so when he announced that he was going to get investors out of family homeownership, he said he was doing it. And I was like, oh, this is great. And then he said the words that I couldn't believe he said. And I'll tell you more details when I give my speech at Davos.
Mm.
If you were doing something for American people, why are you announcing it to the billionaires and not the American people? Because he needed to reassure them. That's why. And so the day after his announcement where he said he was getting investors out of single family home ownership, Caroline Leavitt issued an updated statement from the White House's official account that clarified, we're no longer getting investors out of home ownership. We're getting large institutional investors out of acquiring more single family homes.
Mm.
She was very careful. So they send out a very early benchmark. Don't worry, we're not going to make you sell anything you've got. And we're only going to limit it now to large institutional investors. Well, I want you to look at this date because he made that announcement on January 7th. And if you look right here on January 8th, the SEC announced they were redefining what a large institutional investor was. And they moved it from anyone holding more than $25 million in assets to having to hold $1 billion in assets,
which
means 95% of all investors in the United States, really more like 98, will still be able to buy homes under this new redefinition of large institutional investors.
And how easy would it be for an organization like BlackRock to spin up a little investment firm?
They don't even need to do that. If we're doing this, all they have to do is create 100 LLCs, and each one of them can buy as many houses as they want, which is why when Josh Hawley immediately raised his hand and said, I will write this bill, I called Josh Hawley's office and said, I will help you write this bill. Because Josh Hawley actually wants them out of single-family home ownership. And Trump did not respond to him, and he's gotten no traction with writing the bill to codify this. None.
It's just another thing. And it's worse than doing nothing because it shows that they know what we want. And because it's just like, you know, after Charlie Kirk was murdered, there was a big uproar about the ADL, you know, calling Charlie Kirk an extremist. And Cash Patel comes out and goes, we are cutting all ties with the ADL. The FBI will no longer take advice from the ADL. It just never happened. They just are still involved in the FBI. Yep. So they just come out and announce things that they know that we want, but then they just don't do them. So it's like worse than just not. It's like, okay, it's not that you're out of touch. It's not that you're like, don't know what we want. You know exactly what we want. You tell us you're giving it to us. And then you just go, all right, that'll keep them satisfied for a little while. Let's move on. It's so insulting.
And you know, people want this. Everyone in America wants this. 99% of Americans, 99% of Americans want this. It would be such an easy win, except what? Except that, one, all of our politicians are invested in the companies that own all these houses. Two, they don't actually want housing prices to get more affordable because that means that their own investments go down in value.
I was going to say,
saw Trump come out and he says, wait. We are not going to drive home prices down. We're going to drive interest rates down, but we don't want housing prices to come down. As a homeowner, yes, we do. Yes, we do. Because an artificially inflated market that is only inflated because investors are artificially inflating the value of their own assets so that they can borrow more and over leverage themselves. not to the benefit of any American citizen, is not how you have an improved market. We need Americans to be able to buy homes if we want there to be an America worth having.
Right.
The America that we believe in involves the American dream. And I'm sorry, one, he's not driving interest rates down. They're actually about to go up again. They just said rate increases are back on the table. They have a deadlock at the Fed. And that's because we have a real conflict. Inflation is continuing. That's because it's not inflation, by the way, it's greedflation. You can't have all of the items come down in price. You can't have all of our utilities like that should be coming down in price. You can't have gas come down in price and then say we need to raise prices more. They're not raising wages. What are they doing?
Right.
Okay. But what we do know is that we do need housing prices to come down. And by the way, the Fed doesn't really have that much to do with house interest rates anyway. That's tied to bonds and treasuries, which all the money printing is destroying.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and it does have to do with sort of protecting the financial outlook of boomers, basically. Everybody that has a house and has all of their money tied up in their house as an investment, they don't want to see their net worth go down.
Are you aware? Are you aware? 30 years ago, right? In like 1998, there was a study done on the average age of the home buyers that were buying that year. Now, the average age of the first time home buyers back then was about 31 to 34. Okay, 31. You could buy a home. You owned a home. You had kids, whatever. Before that, it was 26. But right as 2000 was approaching, they found that the average age of all homebuyers, not first-time homebuyers, was 38 years old. Flash forward 30 years. Do you know what the average age of a homebuyer is right now? 68.
Oh, it's the same people.
The same people.
It's the exact same people.
If you didn't buy a house then, you're not buying a house now. We are protecting a bunch of people that already have all the money.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I guess it's even worse than that because there's a less percentage of amount of people still alive after age 60 or whatever. So it should be weighted more towards the youth anyway, but it's not. Yeah. So that's even worse than you might even expect. Right. And I don't have it at hand, but, earlier, I mean, I was shown the collapse. It was a chart from 1983 to 2023, and it's just the absolute collapse of home ownership, of getting married. So it all ties in together. It's just the absolute collapse of Americans achieving their life goals, of putting their life in order. It's getting pushed farther and farther back, and for a lot of people, it just means they never succeed.
I saw a really interesting video online. I apologize. I should have sent it to you, but I saw a really amazing video. It was a focus group of young people, and a gentleman was about 34, and he said, "I don't know anyone that is having children or talking about getting married." And he said, that's not even something I can contemplate. And he said, "Do you know how much you have to abuse a mammal to make it actively not want to reproduce?"
Right. Yeah.
And the thing was, like, animals in captivity don't want to reproduce. We are captive. We are being held hostage by a monopolistic cabal of elites right now. And do you know how much you have to abuse a mammal to make it actively not want to reproduce?
Right.
How much more abuse are we going to take? How much more abuse before it's too much abuse? Because this can only get worse. We're not having kids, so then the retirement crisis gets worse. The Social Security crisis gets worse. The value of our money is coming down. The crisis gets worse. We have entered a death spiral.
Yeah.
Where only the very, very wealthy in this K-shaped economy are doing well, and they will continue to do well. Well, everybody that is literally in the bottom 90% of earners is going to do worse and worse and worse and worse. And unless we start enforcing our antitrust laws, and unless we start getting our elected officials that have been there for 45 years, dinosaurs that are so beholden to the money that is keeping them in office instead of retirement, controlling everything for the billionaires instead of for us, unless we make changes, unless we start voting against incumbents, even in our own party, unless we start doing these things, it will only get worse and worse and worse.
John, I don't know why you say things like this, Tiffany. I don't know why you're smearing our wonderful representatives. Let's go to clip 21 here. I imagine this is who you're talking about so rudely, Tiffany. The great Mitch McConnell, who's been there for 778 years at this point, still sharp. He's still got it. Let's go to clip 21. You're saying he's not on the ball. Let's watch.
Election in 3 short years. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm sorry, I had a hard time hearing you.
That's okay. What are your thoughts on running for re-election in 2026?
What are my thoughts about what?
Running for re-election in 2026. Oh.
That's
Did you hear the question, Senator? Running for re-election in 2026?
Yes.
All right, I'm sorry, you all. We're going to need a minute. Senator.
Take a couple minutes.
No, we don't need a minute. We need a stretcher. We need an embalmer. We need a funeral home.
We need a comfortable retirement somewhere by a lake where you can't do any more damage. So that's Mitch McConnell literally just, like the crew said, lights are on, nobody's home. He's still an incredibly powerful man. They literally wheel him in a wheelchair to vote for things. He is dead. For all intents and purposes, this man is dead.
This is exactly the same as when we had Dianne Feinstein being rolled in weeks before she died. And she sits there and she says, what are we doing? And they say, vote aye. And she says, aye what? And she goes, vote aye. And she says, what am I doing? And they held up her hand and said, aye. On video, this happened. We also just saw, was it Randy Fine this week voting for people that didn't even show up to vote?
Well, that was an old video, but that came up because that was when he was in,
they were probably getting their transfusion to keep them alive for a few more weeks.
Yeah.
We're probably very busy.
No, so yeah, it's just like, what do you expect? I mean, these are the people we have representing us. Mitch McConnell, all powerful of the Senate. I mean, it's pathetic. It's like, no wonder the vicious and hyper clever scumbags in corporate world are just, running roughshod over the American people. We have no protection.
We have 99 problems and one very simple solution, which is that our founding fathers said that running for office was never supposed to be a career. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be a temporary opportunity to represent those that existed in your world. It was supposed to be farmers and garbage men. It was supposed to be people that owned grocery stores and people that worked as teachers. It was supposed to be representative of the people they were meant to represent. Yep. And we have let it become an insider trading riddled millionaire factory of people that only serve billionaires and this disgusting cabal of, at this point, pedophile elites that only protect other pedophile elites. And I'm just about done.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are. I'm seeing a lot of discussion. I've been saying, and maybe we need to get serious about it. If we go to war with Iran, I think we should all meet in D.C. I think we should just don't wait for anybody else to plan it. Just if we start war with Iran, we all need to go to D.C. because that's the absurdity of all this. And we have a Tim Dillon clip, but I don't want to go to it because it's too long. But, it's a class. It's just like, is Iran the reason that you can't afford a home? Is Iran the reason that there's fentanyl everywhere? I mean, we have all of these existential crises in America, and yet 90% of our federal government is focused on that.
There is a tweet that came out from the Iranian military that you had a very prescient tweet recently, right? Over the summer. That was a very big deal. And it was involving a certain country, one of our allies.
Mm-hmm.
And this week they tweeted that somebody was going to take an attempt on Trump and blame it on Iran.
Yeah. And I mean, that has obviously been the play for a long time. And the craziest thing is that, this is Iran Military Daily. Israel is attempting to assassinate Trump and blame it on Iran. Well, in the Epstein files, did you see the one where he's talking to Steve Bannon and he says, you should put Pompeo as vice president so when it happens, Pompeo becomes the guy in charge. And then, according to Max Blumenthal, he was doing an interview actually with Tim Dillon in the summer. He said that Israel had planted tracking devices on the ambulance that Secret Service would use to transport Trump in the event of an injury or assassination attempt, which you would only do if you were trying to, guarantee that you could finish the job.
Out of curiosity, and we don't have time for a long wrote on this, but there have been a bunch of people that analyzed all of the Epstein files and have loaded it into AI. Have you seen the missing 2 years?
Yes, right around from 98 to 2001.
Yep. Everything right around 9/11 is missing. So strange.
Even though, but still in the documents, Ghislaine Maxwell is talking about the shadow commission, the shadow 9/11 commission.
Shadow 9/11 commission.
And she's going to be part of it.
I am so tired of us caring about other countries more than we care about our own people. Why are we carrying the world on our backs like a literal, like just dead weight? And American people are drowning. We're chugging water from a fire hose to piss on fires because there are so many and we can't keep up anymore.
Yeah.
We're drowning. We're drowning. And Americans need more. and they need to start demanding more. And the problem is that at this point, everyone's realized that we can't vote our way out of it with the voting parties we have.
Right.
We need to start making a fundamental change, and that is turning away from anything that is funded by anybody that is not a regular, everyday working class American. I only want people that are committed to the No PACs caucus at this point. If you're going to take money from a corporation or another country, I'm not voting for you. I don't care what party you're in. I'll vote for the other party. I'm fine with that. If you commit to me that you are not taking money and you're going to join the No PACs caucus, you have my vote. I don't care what party you're in.
That's literally the only way that this works is if we make it more advantageous to deny their money. Like, so our outrage and our opposition has to be greater than the benefit they would get than the money. Like, if we can get that, and this has been what we've been saying about AIPAC and all these organizations, they right now offer an exchange. Yes, you know, you have to take our money, which means you're kind of beholden to us and people don't like that, but our money can get you commercials. It gets you elected. So you take the money because you weigh the pros and cons, and the pros win out. We need the cons to win out. We need people to go, hey, if I get anywhere close to you guys, I'm not getting in.
Let me tell you what we really need right now. We need 100,000 Americans to go run for office today.
Yeah.
We need to flood every local election with people that are not, I mean, you can join as a party. I don't care if you join and run under a party. We need a bunch of people that are non-corruptible, that just run on a platform of no corruption. If you don't take money, I will vote for you. I will do better than that. I will get you every friend I have on TikTok and their 170 million followers, and we will help you win. I need 100,000 people to run for office today. Do you know how many offices in the United States every year go uncontested because it's a sure win for one party or the other, and they're already the incumbent, so nobody runs? Just go challenge them. There's actually surprise upsets all the time. I spoke at the Independence Convention in the last election cycle, and there were a bunch of surprise wins because just nobody had run in 20 years because the same guy won all the time.
Yeah.
I will help you get elected. I will bring every creator and friend I have, and we will help you just go run for office. And the only platform you need is I won't take their money, and I will vote for you.
And you know what? It's a win-win situation, because even if you lose the race, your participation and you making that a central pillar of your thing, no matter how popular you get, it's going to be pressure against the other candidate. Say, hey, you got to denounce corruption as well. So even if you lose, you can still win by pressuring the other incumbent or the candidate to denounce or reject money. So yeah, it's really a win-win situation.
So we only have 6 minutes left, and we have to talk about, about pedophile elites, and we've got to talk, unfortunately, about a really gross story we need to talk about. That is where pedophile elites and sexualization of children, unfortunately, meets private equity.
Yeah.
So we're going to pivot, I think, to...
I've been avoiding this story since I first saw it, because it just... Some things I just don't even want to address because it's the implications are so freaky and creepy. It's about a popular baby brand whose products suck, by the way. I've used some of them and they suck. So just from, you know, it shouldn't be hard to boycott this brand if you want to. It's a brand called Frida. They're accused of disgusting and sexual marketing tactics for products for babies, for newborns.
And we don't mean kind of sexualized.
No, blatantly.
We mean blatantly, horrifyingly sexualized advertising that normalizes the sexualization of children.
Babies.
Babies. Very tiny babies.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say what the one that went viral says? Am I allowed to say that on this show?
Yeah, we can show it.
I mean, it's sitting on a Target shelf, right? Okay, there is a product that is a 3-in-1 rectal thermometer. And the ad in question was a drawing of a baby's bare backside with its feet in the air. And it said, the closest your husband's ever going to get to a threesome.
Yeah.
With a baby's bare bottom and their feet in the air. That is not just like one one-off example, because they have said there are other examples I don't think I actually can say.
Yeah, they're pretty bad. If the crew can pull them up. Guys, pull up some of the Frida... images. I know they're in the New York Post article.
This is the rectal thermometer,
the rectal
ad
one,
where it says the closest your husband's going to get to a threesome. But there's another one that we should, I don't know if we have it. Here's one right here that says, how about a quickie?
Yep.
Here's another one, I get turned on easily, and it's about using something on your baby's body.
Yep.
Here's another one, threesome, when your baby's in bed with you and your husband. And then there's another one that is the most horrifying ad I've ever seen about a child and can't believe it exists. It was a social media post of a baby with a substance that is white and gooey all over their face. There it is. And it says, what happens when you pull out too early?
Yeah, who?
Are you kidding me?
Who thought this was a good idea? Like, what the hell?
And I want to be so clear. First of all, this is a company that is entirely aimed at moms, supposedly. I don't know a single mom that thinks this is a good way to advertise a product. But it all made sense to me when I realized who their primary investors were. Because when you look at where their investments come from, they are private equity owned. And if you look, let's see, I don't know if you can get over Harrison here. But Frida, one of their primary investors is Seidler Private Equity, which is the same investors that own Unleash Brands, the company that has been causing all of this harm to children and puts money out of children everywhere. They also are the investors in Up a Baby and their $1,200 baby strollers, freshly picked, and all of their specialized baby shoes and diaper bags. And then you have Aiden and Aeneas, which are muslin baby swaddles, and Legendary Milk, which is a lactation support company. But, of course, no private equity firm would be complete without educational materials and textbooks.
Yeah.
Of course. And so when you have a company that now has a long track record of supporting companies that put money ahead of the safety of children, why would this be shocking to anyone? Why would this be shocking when we know that they also support other companies and don't push back at all when they put money ahead of the death or horrifying injury of children in their urban air adventure parks? Why would we think that this would be out of range? And my favorite is this, because they've updated their website. Additional partnerships not disclosed due to the company's preference for confidentiality. So I personally know that there are companies they're invested in that, because of Unleash Brands and the pushback you guys have carried out, no longer want to be featured on their site. And that's because you guys are doing what you should do. We are doing what we should do, which is say this is not okay. Hurting kids is not okay. Sexualizing kids is not okay. Being a private equity firm that does disgusting things in this country is not okay. And we're getting the word out.
And it's, I mean, the Frida one especially is because, I mean, you're talking about a rectal thermometer, and it's just, it's beyond disgusting. And it's because it's specifically for babies. Nothing Frida makes is for kids over like 1 year old. So it's like disgusting on the face of it, but it just slots perfectly into everything else we've been talking about this week, with Les Wexner owning Victoria's Secret and, you know, all these other brands that sexualize children, Abercrombie and Fitch, constantly in the news. I mean, their CEO was arrested for sexual misconduct, and they've been getting in trouble every couple of years for, you know, these magazines they produce for teenagers that tell them, you know, how to have unprotected sex and all this sort of stuff. And then you have Jeffrey Epstein owning Justice Brands, which popularized this, like, very risque clothing for children. So, like, it's not a small thing. There is clearly a program, a policy. They are trying to sexualize children, and they're trying to make it cute and fun when they do it. There's nothing cute and fun about this. It is
disgusting.
They want
us to look at something and scroll on by and be fine with it, because when you normalize the sexualization of children, then you can have an Epstein drop release, and we're not supposed to notice they're eating babies. Yeah. And murdering and raping children, and we're supposed to be okay with that. We cannot allow this to be normalized. We have to push back, and we have to start really representing the interests of families in America.
Incredible stuff, as always. Tiffany Cianci, follow her on X at The Vino Mom, the website tiffanycianci.com. Powerful.
Today and tomorrow, the last days to get 100 times X entries into the amazing raffle. It only happens every few months, where both of the offerings of the Shelby Mustang and the awesome Ford off-road truck, 100X for every dollar you spend on the store, put into the raffle. You get put in for just the next 2 days, is all that's left, to get both vehicles. There's a time where there's a crossover for 1 week. That ends tomorrow. Every order in the site for a very limited time, it's probably just last throughout the weekend, I'm told, because is this hat. And this is a classic design that I put out on InfoWars like 20 years ago. Notice everybody else copied it, which is cool. I just go, why don't we have that classic design back? So they brought it back, and it's a ring of, what, 13 stars around 1776. And it's simple, it's clean, and a leftist probably won't kill you or murder you for it. You know, if you have like a MAGA or InfoWars hat, that's a real adventure. This is just at the airport or wherever, hey, patriots know. and it's just exciting. Spreads the word. So every order, on top of the sales that are already there, for a limited time, gets a free 1776 ball cap at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the store, become a VIP for $30 a month. You can cancel any time for free. Instantly, you get $40 to spend each month. The minute you click that button for $30, you get $40 to spend. Special deals, special offers, special sales, top everything. So anybody buying anything should be a VIP. And it's really no commitment. You just get better deals. Cancel any time for free. One click in your profile. Everyone should be a VIP. Also, sometimes stuff runs out and sells out. You don't want to happen? Become a subscriber. Cancel any time. They hold it back for you at the biggest discounts as well. Become a VIP. Become a subscriber. But regardless, share the live feeds of the show. Tell folks about those local AM and FM stations, cable stations, because that's how we reach new people, and that's how we change the world. The whole globalist house of cards is coming down. We've been vindicated. You've been vindicated. Nothing's going to stop that. Stay with us. Massive guest straight ahead.